Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Ed Crane. They're not ready for war and may not be anytime soon. That assessment of Iraqi forces from senior U.S. military officials.
I'm Barry Bagnato. Congressional criticism will likely be fueled further by a Pentagon admission that the number of Iraqi forces operating independently has declined significantly. Joint Chiefs Chairman General Peter Pace says there are 6 Iraqi battalions operating on their own compared to 10 in March.
As units operate in the field, they have casualties. They consume vehicles and equipment. They need to come out of the line and be resupplied.
He sees no major concern here, but with the Iraq debate reaching a fever pitch, the Bush administration needs to find some evidence the burden on U.S. troops will soon start easing.
A new bill from 2 respected Republican senators is aimed at persuading the administration to bring American forces home sooner rather than later.
The measure from Republican Senators Dick Lugar and John Warner clearly indicates the turmoil Iraq is causing in Republican ranks, but stops far short of forcing President Bush to change course. It would declare the initial congressional approval for the war obsolete and require the administration to report to Congress on plans to get combat troops out of the role of policing sectarian violence and starting to withdraw them, but it would not actually require those plans be used.
Correspondent Bob Fosse in Washington. Concern is mounting over possible terror activity in the U.S. this summer. Correspondent Bob Orr says a number of factors are making the FBI nervous.
U.S. officials say there's not any one thing they can really put their finger on, and they certainly have no evidence saying that any kind of attack is imminent. But there are just a number of troubling things across the board that officials say gives us a good reason to at least worry. They point to the bombings recently in northern Africa, of course the recent U.K. attacks, the emergence of a safe haven inside Pakistan for Al-Qaeda, and that one really seems to be driving the biggest part of the concern.
CBS News correspondent Bob Orr. While flipping burgers at a Long Island McDonald's, 2 high school students allegedly hatched a plot to stage a Columbine-style assault on students and teachers at their high school in Bohemia, New York. Cops said this plot was broken up when an unidentified woman turned in a meticulous diary that one of the would-be shooters apparently dropped in a parking lot. The Galaxy has a new star, the L.A. Galaxy, that is. The Major League Soccer franchise welcomed megastar David Beckham to the team today. More from CBS's Steve Futter.
A scene of celebration here at the Galaxy Stadium as David Beckham is officially introduced as a member of the Galaxy. Fans in the background, you can hear them cheering. Loud music being played. Beckham holding up his Galaxy jersey. Confetti being blown up into the air.
Attorneys for one-time media giant Conrad Black say they'll appeal his conviction today of 3 counts of mail fraud and 1 count of obstruction of justice. The government claims he and colleagues diverted profits from shareholders of Hollinger Incorporated. Despite higher oil prices, now about $74 a barrel, Wall Street gained 45 points. This is CBS News.
Carl, don't panic, but there's a blue thing around your head. It appears to contain a hotel and some sort of savings message.
Oh, yeah. I just booked a last-minute summer vacation on Orbitz. Saved 30% on my hotel. Got a great room, too.
Oh. Yeah. That's what I figured. Can I touch it?
No.
Please.
No.
Book your last-minute vacation to select summer destinations and save up to 30% on your hotel. Book at Orbitz.com and stay a step ahead.
This Sunday,
are you ready to rock the house?
It's all new Celebrity Reality on VH1. With Rock of Love starring Brett Michaels.
I am so in love with Brett Michaels.
And Scott Baio is 45 and single.
Who's the first person you ever had sex with?
Erin Moran.
Donnie Diddlum Chachi.
Right!
VH1 is your Sunday night destination.
This rocks.
With a new Celebrity Reality lineup. Rock of Love starring Brett Michaels and Scott Baio is 45 and single. Premieres this Sunday starting at 9, 8 central. Only on VH1.
They gathered by the hundreds, waiting for hours to get a final glimpse of one of America's first ladies, Claudia Lady Bird Johnson. CBS's Peter King with details from Austin.
Doris Gillen was a lady for Lyndon back in 1960. Remembers Lady Bird Johnson's words when her husband lost the Democratic presidential nod to John F. Kennedy.
She said he would have been a noble president. I remember that word, noble.
She and daughter Gay both knew Lady Bird Johnson.
If I had to describe her, I'd say she was a true lady.
And she was the Texas queen.
And I mean that.
in the very best sense of the word.
The former First Lady lies in repose in the same spot where President Johnson lay in state. The doors will stay open to the public until midday tomorrow. Peter King, CBS News, Austin.
The government says fewer teens are getting pregnant, perhaps because fewer are experimenting with sexual intercourse. Teen pregnancy has dropped to a record low, with fewer than 7 million teens admitting to having intercourse. Of those who say they are sexually active, about half say they use condoms. I'm Ed Crane, CBS News.
Get the good stuff.
This is Michael Waltrip, here to let you know about a great new product at Napa. Napa now has 3M Performance Finish, a superior new waxing solution that actually bonds to your car's paint surface, providing long-lasting and durable paint protection, not to mention a deep gloss finish that will be the envy of all your neighbors. Protect your car today with 3M Performance Finish, just $12.49 at Napa.
Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
And now for the bonus round. If this little piggy went to market, how much milk did it buy?
4 gallons?
Correct. If a tree grows in Brooklyn...
A weed is cut in Staten Island.
Correct. How much gas do you use renting movies from Netflix?
None.
Correct! Netflix! Now there's two ways to get movies. DVDs in the mail fast and instantly on your PC in as little as 30 seconds. Netflix! It's that easy. 5 movies for $5 a month.
Restrictions apply. See terms of use for start time and 5x5 details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. You can't see it, but can you hear my table? Impeachment has always been on the table here at the Peter B. Collins Show. We've got a lot to talk about, and I'm glad you've joined us, however you're listening, on a great AM radio station, or perhaps online, or those little earbuds, so you're listening to a podcast. We originate in San Francisco. You can call this program toll-free during our live origination, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday. That number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. You don't like what I'm saying? Hey, send it to fullofit at peterbcollins.com. Don't add the SH, just full of it. We're going to kick off our program today with former Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman. She'll join us in just a moment. Coming up about half an hour, we're going to talk about how Democrats in control of the Congress are reshaping the Farm Bill. It's not just subsidies for agribusiness. It may have actually some good elements in it. And maybe more money for West Coast farmers. We'll find out. Also on today's program, we're going to meet the guys behind MyDD and the new blog called OpenLeft.com. Matt Stoller and Chris Bowers will be joining us next hour. Then we're going to talk with Satyam Khanna from the Center for American Progress on George W. Bush's comment about war fatigue. We're tired of a lot more than just the war, W. And Brad Friedman has the day off so that he can gear up to sit in for me when I go on vacation next week and the following week. Brad is our election protection specialist, and subbing for him today, Mark Crispin Miller, a professor of media at New York University and the author of the book Fooled Again, The Real Case for Electoral Reform. Mark Crispin Miller with us in our third hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show today. As I mentioned, Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman served 4 terms. She was a prominent player on the Judiciary Committee during the Nixon impeachment run-up.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. At our convention.
And she is co-author with Cynthia Cooper of The Impeachment of George W. Bush, a practical guide for concerned citizens. We'll tell you about the website for that coming up.
In your ear, they said, hey, babe. Make a date with the Watergate. My fellow Americans, I said, hey, honey, make a date with the Watergate.
And I couldn't help, Congresswoman, but starting off our conversation today with a nostalgic look back at the Nixon years, because 11 hours of tapes that weren't previously available were released this week. And there's some cute little items in there, maybe some actionable stuff, too. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, it's nice to talk with you again, ma'am. And I just had to ask for your comment on the 11-page single-spaced memo that Richard Nixon wrote, trying to warm himself up in the perception of average Americans, and he referred to it as the warmth business, which has a ring kind of like Poppy Bush used to talk about the vision thing.
Well, it didn't work.
No, it didn't. They couldn't warm him up. Correct. But I think it's cute that he wrote this memo. He said, there are innumerable examples of warm items. He'd been nicey-nicey to the cabinet staff and Congress around Christmas time. Now, you were a member of Congress at that time. Did you feel that Nixon was nicey-nice to you?
Well, actually, let's put it this way. I was elected in 72, and I boycotted the first reception he had for members of Congress at Christmas time because he was engaged in the Christmas bombing. And then by the end of November, by Christmas of 73, impeachment was underway. So he wasn't being actually very nicey-nicey to members of the House Judiciary Committee. So I never really got invited to the White House under Mr. Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
After that.
Do you think George W. Bush has written a memo like that? Gee, I've been so nicey-nicey to Nancy Pelosi, and she keeps sending these nasty bills up from the Hill.
I don't think so. I don't think he writes memos.
No, he doesn't seem to do much of that at all. He just rides his mountain bike. Well, Elizabeth Holtzman, I appreciate you joining us today. I want to direct people to the website impeachbushbook.com, where they can get more information about the book you've co-authored, The Impeachment of George W. Bush. We'll get to that issue in a moment, but let's warm up with Scooter Libby. And just today I was reading in the Washington Post online about some comments Judge Reggie Walton made in a court filing. And we should point out that he is a tough-on-crime judge who was appointed by George W. Bush. But Reggie Walton was kind of whining about the commutation of Scooter Libby's sentence and the fact that the president is kind of making law on an ad hoc basis. And he pointed out two issues. One, that in the Rita decision recently, the Supreme Court said that 2.5, 3 years for perjury is a reasonable sentence. And then Bush came out and said that it was excessive for his friend Scooter. And secondly, Walton was complaining that there is no precedent for putting somebody on probation who didn't go to jail in the first place.
Well, I can understand why the judge is upset. I mean, here you went through, in essence, what was a charade. You had a prosecutor, jurors, prosecutorial staff, court staff, judicial staff, a judge, taking very seriously their obligation to make the rule of law work in this particular case. And here comes President Bush and says, this is my team, you know, he's on my team, so what goes for other people doesn't go for him. And I think obviously it makes people upset, particularly those who were in the process. And of course the judge is concerned too, because there's actually a little legal issue here, namely, if the law says that probation starts after a sentence of jail, and there is no sentence of jail, how does probation start? I mean, Bush said he was going to have a sentence of probation, but, you know, Bush doesn't seem to understand the law about many things, so this is not a surprise. But
isn't there somebody else?
The judicial system is left to clean up after this commutation.
And I guess White House counsel Fred Fielding is too busy, defending these subpoenas from Congress to advise the president that there's no legal basis for this commutation and probation combination.
Right. Well, I guess the president can claim he's got a legal basis for whatever kind of executive clemency he wants, and other people will have to pick up the pieces. But sure, it's a good example, and another good example of how sloppy the White House has been about big things and small.
Mm-hmm. So anything else you'd like to mention about the Libby commutation, because I want to move on to the showdown over presidential privilege?
Well, to me, it's really what concerns me very much about it is that on the one hand, the president says, well, I accept the jury verdict, and so he's got this tough fine, and he's got probation, but he's still dangling a pardon out mm-hmm. in front of him. And why would you want to pardon him after you said that you respect the jury verdict?
Yeah.
So a lot of people are speculating that this whole thing is just to keep Libby quiet. And, of course, that's if that's the case, that's kind of frightening because it just takes us right back to Watergate, where you had President Nixon giving out offers of presidential pardons to the burglars, the Watergate burglars, to keep them from talking about higher-ups involved in criminal behavior.
And at the Thursday news conference, the president finally broke silence on the Libby case, only to speak kind of vaguely and wistfully about, well, gosh, what if somebody had actually come forward and admitted about this, and then we wouldn't have had to have the whole investigation? And you know, he acts as if he had no power to compel his employees to tell him the frickin' truth.
Well, let's start off with the fact that he's never said that Libby engaged in any wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
He's never criticized Libby. He's never said he did anything wrong. He's only been concerned about the excessiveness of the sentence. What message is that sending?
Yeah.
Your own employee is convicted by an impartial jury of lying. It's not to lying to Liz Holtzman. It's lying to the FBI, the central law enforcement agency of the government. It's lying to the grand jury. Don't you have any respect for the FBI or the grand jury? So here you have a president who seems to find nothing wrong with that. And
but
by commuting the sentence, saying, well, you know, so what?
But lying is a fundamental element of the White House zeitgeist. We have Alberto Gonzalez, who has clearly lied under oath repeatedly to both the Senate and House Judiciary Committees, and Bush says, oh, no wrongdoing.
Well, they can't get rid of Alberto Gonzalez. I wrote an article about this, and it's not so easy for them to get rid of him because I want to go back to Watergate again. I'm sorry to be
okay.
So historically minded. But we got a special prosecutor in Watergate, which was one of the reasons that Richard Nixon was finally, that the House committee voted for his impeachment and he had to resign. And we got the special prosecutor because there was a vacancy in the Attorney General's slot. And Elliot Richardson was appointed to fill that vacancy. And the Senate, of course, was, Elliot Richardson was a very fine fellow, and the Senate was going along with that. But at that point, the Watergate obstruction cover-up was beginning to unravel. And so the Senate said, you know something? We're not going to confirm you, Mr. Richardson. We like you a lot. We think you're a very fine fellow. But you've got to agree to appoint a special prosecutor, and then we will confirm you. So we got the special prosecutor confirmed, and Elliot Richardson got confirmed, and that's the beginning of the end of Richard Nixon. And the last thing this White House wants is for a new attorney general to come up and have to appoint a special prosecutor to look at all the crimes that were committed in this administration by the top-level people, crimes in connection with violations of the War Crimes Act, crimes in connection with violations of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act,
mm-hmm.
and other kinds of crimes. So they do not want to open that Pandora's box. So I suggest to you that Alberto Gonzalez will be there as long as George Bush is there.
And just to briefly, because we have to go to a break, Gonzalez could be impeached if the Democrats tried, right?
Absolutely. There are certainly grounds for his impeachment. I mean, misconduct, of serious misconduct on his part.
Indeed. We'll take a break and return with former Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman. She's co-author of The Impeachment of George W. Bush, A Practical Guide for Concerned Citizens. And we'll get some pointers in the next segment. You got a question or a comment? Call us now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
Hi, I'm Dallas.
And I'm Ashley.
We would like to invite you to Malibu by the Sea in Monterey.
A bold new full-service salon and bronzing spa.
We specialize in color, multi-dimensional highlights, trendy cuts, and the highest quality human hair extensions.
We'd love to help you with your new look, so give us a call at 383-0807. That's 383-0807.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's Ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready!
I found a Sunday school program for my children, one that has helped them develop their own system of beliefs and has taught them ethics and justice.
My partner and I were brought up in different faiths. The Unitarian Universalists welcome us both and honor our roots.
With so much division in our country, I found a congregation where people with different beliefs could gather as one. Unitarian Universalists seek wisdom from all the world's religions.
We were so caught up in our careers. We needed a faith community to bring us back in touch with the important things in life. We joined the Unitarian Universalists.
Unitarian Universalists believe in respect, freedom, and justice for all people. Come visit our church in the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website at uucmp.org or call 624-7404.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show, only on KRXA 540. Down in
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, Senator Leahy and Congressman Conyers have not called on Elvis to testify before their respective committees, but it might be easier to get him than Harriet Myers. She was a no-show at the Thursday hearing, while Sarah Taylor, who had been a political director at the White House, did show up and then only answered questions that were favorable to the president while invoking executive privilege. Elizabeth Holtzman is with us, former congresswoman and an expert on these issues of impeachment and the confrontation between the branches of our government. And, Congresswoman, what do you make of, first of all, Sarah Taylor's performance? Because, as I noted, she only answered questions that were helpful to the White House while saying, I can't talk about that, and I'm really, really sorry.
Well, first of all, I think that the claim of executive privilege was improper because in the case involving the Nixon tapes, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on executive privilege and said, when there's an investigation, and that was a criminal investigation, the privilege falls. The criminal investigation is more important than the right of the executive privilege. Here, while we don't have a criminal investigation, it's quite clear that it could lead to one because the misuse of U.S. attorneys, getting them, for example, to stop investigations against people who are Republicans, or getting them to start phony investigations could well be criminal. Certainly the first one is criminal in character. And so we're talking about behavior that, or actions that, an investigation that could lead to criminal conduct and criminal prosecution. So I don't think you have an executive privilege there, and I think I never heard of selectively invoking it.
Yes. So with Myers not showing up and the committees threatening to cite her for contempt, is this just going to lead to a protracted legal squabble that will run out the clock on the Bush administration, or is there any shortcut that can provoke a resolution sooner?
Well, the shortcut here is really impeachment. This is a president who will not tell the Congress the facts, has stonewalled them over possible criminal wrongdoing in the White House with regard to the U.S. Attorney's matter. That's only one aspect, and is not inclined to be forthcoming about the information. So what else can Congress do? And that's, if that were the only thing, of course, that wouldn't be sufficient, in my view, for impeachment. But there's so many other grounds bring impeachment proceedings. I think you have a president who has put himself above the law and above accountability, above scrutiny, above examination by the Congress. And this is wrong.
Mm-hmm. So why are the Democrats so timid about the impeachment issue? And I have great respect, and I know Nancy Pelosi, but I deeply disagree with her on this posture.
Well, I'm sure she's very sincere in her view about this. And it's not surprising. I want to go back to Watergate. It was not the House of Representatives that started the impeachment proceedings. It was the American people. And that's when the president had the special prosecutor fired who was trying to get Nixon's own tapes to find out whether crimes had been committed and who was involved. And the president had him fired because those tapes would obviously have shown president's involvement, and did show the president's involvement when we finally got them. And the American people at that point said, Congress didn't say anything, but the American people said, in a firestorm of protest all over the country, you've got to hold the president accountable. And so then Congress began impeachment proceedings. It came from the American people. And I think if the American people want to put impeachment on the table, they will. We've just seen a recent poll that showed just about the country about evenly split, 45-46, on whether the president of the United States should be impeached. And there was overwhelming support for the impeachment of Cheney, 54-40, in favor of impeachment. So the American people understand that we've seen serious abuses of power in the White House. And so I think they're open to an impeachment that's fair, that's responsible, and that was conducted in the way, and bipartisan, of course, as we conducted the Nixon impeachment process.
But it seems that after the attempted removal from office of Bill Clinton, that both parties are shy about this, and it appears that the Democrats are not willing to move forward unless there is bipartisan support, and it appears that Bush will be able to control most of his Republicans, at least for another 18 months.
Well, I don't think that Bush is able to control the Republicans for 18 months. I think we're beginning to see major breakaways in the Senate on the war. As of September, if the president doesn't change his course of action in the war, there are going to be many, many more senators breaking away. There are over 20 Republican senators up for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
They are very, very nervous about his conduct. I think even in the House of Representatives, there's a lot of concern. The American people want out of Iraq, and they're tired of the president's, stubbornness. Stubborn, plain old stubborn.
Indeed, and we're going to talk about war fatigue and his comments a little bit later on in the program. Congresswoman, thank you for your time today. Elizabeth Holtzman,
thank you.
Co-author of The Impeachment of George W. Bush, A Practical Guide for Concerned Citizens, the website impeachbushbook.com. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Farm Bill working its way through Washington now. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Both means our investigation turned up nothing.
Because somebody testifies by him before a grand jury doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men or three women can rule. Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You got to catapult the propaganda.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo. So much
I'm Peter B. Collins, and I've been doing this talk radio thing for over 30 years. And about every 10 years, there's a new farm bill in Washington. And I will concede that in the past, people would say, hey, why don't you do a segment about the farm bill?
Does that make me
I'd say, oh, wouldn't that be about as exciting as maybe reading from the Manhattan phone book? But this year, things are different. Democrats in charge of the committees in Washington are really making substantive changes in the scope and the thrust of the Farm Bill, and it appears that we're going to get more than, you know, corporate cash for agribusiness. We're going to get a couple of comments on it this half hour from people who know much more than I do. Anupama Joshi is director of the National Farm to School Program, and since 2002, she has spearheaded the successful farm to school movement that's revolutionizing school cafeterias around the country and providing additional marketing avenues for small farm family farmers. And I want to thank you for joining us today, Anupama.
Hi, Peter.
It's my
pleasure to be on the show.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for talking with us. And also with us for this segment is the author of a new book called Food Fight, and he is Daniel Imhoff. Daniel, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
I learned from the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle this week that Dianne Feinstein has a copy of your book.
Yep. Thanks to somebody who's a fan of the book and handed it to her. She has it, as do a lot of other aides and representatives throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. Now, ordinarily, when I invite an author on the program, I've at least taken a look at the book, but we didn't have time for that this week, so I apologize, and perhaps I'll get it in the future and invite you back.
Okay.
But give us a quick sketch of what you cover, and particularly how it applies to the Farm Bill.
Well, this book was really trying to address the very thing you talked about in your opening remarks. Just, you know, how do you explain this important, complicated, historically dense legislation that has so many impacts on the food and the farming system for the average person? So I really had you as my ideal audience when I did it. And so I just looked at the bill and looked at everything from nutrition to family farming economies to trade, the impacts of subsidies that both here on our family farmers and abroad, conservation, global warming, energy, the whole gamut of things that this big taxpayer-funded legislation sets in motion, and just tried to convince people that the only way we're going to get change is that everybody rises up and realizes what a stake we actually have in the outcome of this bill.
Mm-hmm. And so how do we take on the entrenched interests who have been feeding at this trough for so long and turn the Farm Bill into more than just subsidies for people who are paid not to grow crops?
You know, I just think we need to vote with our forks. And we have to, you know, realize that it's not just what we do at the farmers market and, you know, just trying to support family farmers whenever. Our votes also have to count. There are a lot more citizens than there are farmers. There are way more concerned citizens about food and nutrition and the health of the land than there are farmers who receive subsidies. And really, the real recipients of the lion's share of current farm programs are huge agribusiness mega farms and mega feedlots that you've talked about. And the consequences are dire. And here we have a farm economy in which corn prices and soybean prices have really rebounded. So the market is favorable to decrease these subsidies. There's no better time than now to really close the book on 20th century farm bill practices and start to revise them for current conditions.
That's Daniel Imhoff. His book is called Food Fight. Also with us is Anupama Joshi. And Anupama, do you see a significant change here in both the frame and in the details that members of Congress are really seeing the linkage? Go ahead.
Just sort of picking up on what Daniel was saying, I think it's a little bit different this time also because grassroots groups have sort of come together realizing that there are these various aspects of, you know, conservation, energy, nutrition and health and farming and agriculture that are components of the Farm Bill. And really grassroots organizations and community-based organizations have come together, to the table to talk about, you know, how can there be a unified message that's going out to our legislators in terms of what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some good things, but there's also still a sort of imbalance that favors, you know, factory farms and agribusiness. So I totally agree with that. much more so than, you know, than promoting things that would link grassroots community food security relationships and initiatives that would really link up the consumer who's, you know, eventually going to be the person who's going to be affected by the farm bill with, you know, farmers, real-time farmers who are growing the food that people are interested in eating, you know, organic, be it organic, be it sustainably grown, or, you know, or just local, which is, you know, which is the big thing these days.
Mm-hmm. And your website is farmtoschool.org, and I'm aware of the work that Alice Waters has done in the Berkeley schools here in the Bay Area. And I find this fascinating on a number of levels because I think it can address nutrition education and help young people understand the linkage between, you know, good food and healthy living and fighting obesity and other problems. It also can help, I think, educate parents who may be, you know, out of the fast food generation and, you know, not really open, at least initially, to organic food and, you know, things that don't involve the processing and factory farming. Talk a little bit about this effort and how you think it's changing the way people think, including adults.
I mean, Farm to School is really is a model. It's a holistic approach that can be translated, you know, at the local level in whatever way you want. And for us, Farm to School really does have a couple of components, some of which you mentioned. The first one being really, you know, buying, schools buying from local farmers, you know, be it within a 100-mile radius or be it within a region, depending on which part of the country you are from. And the second one being school gardens and, you know, classroom-based nutrition education and health education and agriculture education, because really our kids are not aware of where food's coming from. You know, most kids think that, especially at the elementary school, most kids don't even realize that there's tomatoes and wheat and, you know, all kinds of things that go on a pizza. I mean, I think they really don't get it. They just have a sense that pizza comes from Pizza Hut, which is just, you know, astounding to me. And I think that is really important, that educational aspect of Farm to School is really important. We also encourage kids to not just learn in the classroom, but, you know, get them involved in hands-on activities like, you know, school gardens or composting programs, waste management programs. We also take them to tour farms or to tour farmers markets and get farmers and chefs in the classroom to talk about how, you know, different kinds of and varieties of tomatoes are available or apples are available in season. Chefs can, you know, talk about different ways of cooking, because really cooking is something that the American you know, population, the skills, the cooking skills are really sort of lacking. And, you know, that's where the connection with the parents and the community comes in, because of things that kids learn at home, at school, they're taking it back home. And we also do parent education and community outreach efforts that help parents understand, you know, understand and learn cooking skills, understand what is nutrition, good nutrition for themselves, their families. And I've really seen a change in, you know, in especially with programs that we are involved with, that kids do take back the message from the schools, you know, what they learn in the schools back to their parents. And I've heard kids come back and say, as a result of the program, I told my mom not to buy any more Coke. I've made decisions in my own lifestyle that I make sure that after exercising, I don't pick up a bottle of soda, but I do, you know, try and have a fresh fruit as a snack, which is just, you know, endearing to hear. And it's really encouraging that these kids are, you know, really getting the message and taking it back into the community, which is really where it needs to be. I mean, you know, there's sort of a going back on, you know, food and farming and agriculture and cooking skills and education that's needed that Farm to School addresses. And that is the reason why it's really making such an impact across the country.
That's Anupama Joshi, and the website is farmtoschool.org. Turning back to Daniel Imhoff, Daniel, I'd like to you to address two things to the extent of your knowledge about the farm bill as it's currently moving through the committees. Number one, is the role of the USDA being redefined? That's the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Because in my view, they have been a promotion arm for agribusiness in this country. And when it comes to food safety and security issues, they represent the interests of the industries and not of consumers. We saw that with the mad cow outbreak at Christmas of 03. And I'm just curious if you think that there really is a shift and that the USDA's role will be changing into more of an advocacy and education role.
No, I don't think that that's going to happen. I mean, I would say that I think almost anything can be better than what we have right now. I was in Washington a few years ago for another book project that I did, which is really about conservation in agriculture, and I was told by one of the top scientists there that they're not even allowed to talk about co-evolution in the USDA because of certain religious and moral dictates coming from the top. I think that this is, you know, USDA is going to have to change from the net roots, from the grassroots. And, you know, I would say that this struggle, this food fight that's going on in Congress right now, it's by no means a definite thing that we're going to get a better farm bill. I think a lot of people are struggling right now. There's a big tussle between big food, big ag, which has dominated the farm bills, and then all these reformers who have for years been trying to just chip away. But I would say that this year is more promising than ever. There's more of a spotlight. There's a developing literacy about how important what happens at the USDA is to our food system. And so the time's really now to learn about it and get involved.
And who would you direct our listeners to lobby in terms of trying to get a more humane, pro-organic, consumer-oriented farm bill?
Well, it's important right now to contact your representatives, your House representatives, because they're about to be presented with a version of a House farm bill next week. And also, Speaker Pelosi, I think, really needs to hear that she'll be supported if she takes up a position of reform and real true change that might not be so popular in the traditional commodity producing states. But I think that there's a lot of support there, like I said, and our representatives have to know that we care about their votes and we're watching and we're learning. I think traditionally a lot of representatives, their farm bill votes have been something that they just traded away. And they didn't even really know what they were trading away in the process.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel Imhoff, in the same San Francisco Chronicle article earlier this week, or actually in an adjacent article, they talked about the new congressman from just over the hill from the Bay Area, Jerry McNerney, who represents Pleasanton on this side of the hill and then Modesto on the other side of the hill, and that he is working to bring conservation dollars into his district. How would these be used, and would this be diverted from the subsidies to farm industries that have been in place in the past?
Well, that's the real struggle right now. I mean, there's a lot of people calling for a lot of different things, from money for farm to school, expanded farmers markets, more money for conservation programs that would go toward fruit and vegetable growers like that district that you just talked about. The real question is, in these days of budget belt tightening with the Democrats in charge, where is the money coming from? And some people say, well, that money should come from the commodity programs, which are, you know, just giving more profits to already wealthy growers, or is just giving payments to grow to crops when prices are abnormally high. But of course, you know, that's real money, and those commodity producing states do not want to relinquish the dollars, and that's where the real fight is going to come in. You know, that district over there around Pleasanton, they don't receive cotton or rice subsidies, which are the primary crops that receive government supports through the Farm Bill in California. 95% of the growers don't get any payments at all, and that's what they're clamoring for. Hey, let's give us a share of, and especially a share when we fund conservation through the Farm Bill. I think you can argue that it really does come back as a public benefit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I imagine a lot of these farmers are just kind of clicking their heels, and they want to be in Kansas, where a lot
lion.
Well, yeah, or at least from the banking perspective.
Right. Now, I'm looking at a chart here. Kansas, 61% of the farms there get government subsidies. And so I can imagine there are Californians jealous of that. Daniel Imhoff, the author of Food Fight, thank you for joining us. I know you need to run,
yeah,
but I appreciate you joining us, and we'll talk again.
I appreciate your time.
And Anupama Joshi, stay with us. We'll talk more with you right after the break. 888-5-PETER-B. If you have a question about the farm bill that's working its way through Washington, 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. Collins. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Tom Hartman.
Why would we hand the beating heart of democracy, the vote, over to a private corporation?
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
And we're giving it to a corporation called Diebold, whose former president, Wally O'Dell, says, you know, I'm going to give Ohio to George W. Bush. We're giving it to a corporation like ES&S, who used to be run by Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska. I mean, it's our vote.
Tom Hartman, weekday evenings on KRXA 540.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
In Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Man, I really believe that pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of that who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face that you help this happen.
I totally concur. And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at the high levels of our government. And so
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour. We're talking with Anupama Joshi, director of the National Farm to School Program, and we're talking about the Farm Bill. It's up for renewal this year. And Anupama, tell me your thoughts in reaction to Daniel Imhoff, who, while he shares some optimism that things might change, he also feels that, traditional forces there that have extracted a lot of taxpayer dollars through the farm bills in the past aren't going to go away easily.
I think he's absolutely right. I mean, that is the reality. Having said that, I think, you know, we are optimistic that at least some change might come through this year. And like him, like Daniel, I am, more optimistic than previous years as well. I think the sort of public outrage about and public outrage and sort of consumer awareness that has come about, you know, regarding obesity, especially childhood obesity, and sort of the health costs of, you know, the food, that health costs of, you know, impacts of food that we're eating and how that's, you know, impacting the economy, I think, you know, is something that is that has happened only over the last couple of years, and that's something new. And, you know, that is probably going to, you know, make the shift. I'm not sure we are still quite there yet in terms of, you know, getting whatever we want out of the Farm Bill. But like Daniel, I am fairly optimistic about at least getting some things that we want, especially from the farm-to-cafeteria or farm-to-school angle.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of cafeterias, have you had an opportunity to dine any time in the recent past at the Congressional Dining Room in the Capitol?
I have not.
I'm just curious if they've changed their menus and, you know, provided healthier eats for our elected officials.
I doubt it. I bet they probably source food from one of the, you know, one of the food service companies, and which is probably not as fresh and, you know, interesting.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see that.
Yeah, I would. I was fortunate enough to dine in the Senate dining room. This was about 6 years ago, and it was pretty greasy.
I'm not surprised.
That's what I remember of the menu choices. Now, what are some of the bright spots in this legislative process so far? I know we don't have a final form for the bill, but as you see it evolving, what are some of the positives that you see from the perspective of consumers and people who want, you know, a healthier balance between the interests of consumers and agribusiness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the things that we've been advocating for and that sort of look encouraging, though, like Daniel said, you know, nothing is really decided till, you know, till it actually comes out, is one of the things is a reauthorization for a grant program called the Community Food Projects Grant Program, mm-hmm. Which is through the USDA. This program was authorized in the 2002 Farm Bill, and this is up for reauthorization again now. And we are hoping to actually increase the amount of funding available through these projects. I mean, these projects are really the heart and soul of, you know, grassroots community-based food security efforts, and to ramp up the amount of funding for these projects would really be helpful. Farm to cafeteria and farm to school efforts would really benefit as well if these were, you know, these were reauthorized at the $30 million amount that we've requested.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece of it would be that instead of asking for, you know, appropriations process to go for the community food projects grants, that it would be, you know, funding would be made mandatory for these projects. And, you know, if that was the case, I think that would be just wonderful. So that's one thing that we are hopeful about.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is language. It's not really about, you know, it doesn't really involve any money, and so we are hopeful that it would actually go through much more easily. It's about language to be included that permits schools and other public institutions to preferentially buy from within their own geographic area. The 2002 Farm Bill had actually permitted schools to purchase local foods, but subsequent to that, the USDA sent out a memo saying that local products could not be bought unless they went through the regular bidding process. And
yeah.
So there's been a lot of confusion between USDA and school districts, you know, going back and forth. And this, you know, USDA's position on this has been that schools cannot buy from a particular geographic area.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was language included that clarified that within the Farm Bill, I think there would be a lot more schools interested in buying from local farmers from within their own geographic region, which would support a lot of farm to cafeteria efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And the third piece that we are hopeful about as well is the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Snack Program, which is a program that provides fruits and vegetables free of cost to schools in certain states currently, and we are hoping that this would be something that could be ramped up again to include all the states in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think the federal government has done studies that shows that this program has been successful and has helped improve the eating habits of kids, that kids are eating more fruits and vegetables through this program. So those are the, you know, two or three things that we would definitely like to see
mm-hmm.
happen and are hopeful, you know, especially with at least, you know, one or two of these happening, we would be really happy.
Anupama Joshi, thanks for joining us today. A pleasure to talk with you. Again, the website is farmtoschool.org.
Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up next, we're going to meet the two guys who have joined Mike Lux to create the new website and blog, Open Left, here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com. SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. SoberStones.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A new challenge to the president's Iraq strategy.
The measure from Republican Senators Dick Lugar and John Warner clearly indicates the turmoil Iraq is causing in Republican ranks.
U.S. intelligence watches and worries.
There are troubling signs that something bad is brewing.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Not likely, say two prominent Senate Republicans. Richard Lugar and John Warner say it's not likely Iraq will have a functioning Democratic government anytime soon, so they're offering a new plan. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
This proposal from Republican Senators John Warner and Dick Lugar certainly illustrates the serious problems President Bush is facing in his own party. But the two prominent voices in military affairs are offering a compromise unlikely to garner much Democratic support. Their amendment has some strong language. It declares Congress's initial approval of the Iraq war to overthrow Saddam Hussein obsolete and orders the administration to report to Congress by October on plans to have U.S. combat troops severely limit their role and start to withdraw, but it would not require any of those plans be carried out. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
A day after reporting that the Iraqi government has failed to make much progress, the administration acknowledged today that the Iraqi military has lost ground. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has that.
The Pentagon reveals the ability of Iraqi security forces to operate on their own has declined significantly despite expanded U.S. efforts to turn over more of the fighting to them. Joint Chiefs Chairman General Peter Pace says in March,
there were 10 battalions that were operating independently. Today, the numbers I saw were 6 battalions operating independently.
These numbers will likely fuel the growing criticism of the war effort, especially on Capitol Hill.
White House spokesman Tony Snow told reporters today that the Iraqi parliament is likely to take the month of August off. He said it's 130 degrees in Baghdad in August. When reminded that U.S. troops will be fighting in that heat, Snow said, that's a good point. Now this.
The new Die Hard Platinum presents Under the Hood with Positive and Negative.
Hey, we're the new Die Hard Platinum Battery. My name is Positive. Negative, introduce yourself.
What's the point?
Well, so we can tell people that we have 40% more reserve capacity.
Yeah, and our Evolution technology can power all sorts of gadgets for your car.
Well, I think it's something to be proud of.
Yes, you're beaming, and it's giving me a migraine.
The new Die Hard Platinum Battery with Evolution technology. Available at Sears and Sears.com/platinum. More starting power, more reserve power. Die Hard. Currently made with Spiral AGM batteries.
Hey, Dave. Mike here. Hey, this afternoon at around 2:27, the plumbing's going to back up with a lot of grayish, goopy stuff. It'll all overflow onto the tile floor and make a nice little safety hazard. Cool? Anyway, just thought you should know.
In your job, you don't get warnings. So Grainger's just added thousands of new plumbing products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. Valves, fittings, fixtures, toilets, water heaters, whatever it takes. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Trying to find what one official calls the needle in the haystack, FBI counterterrorism agents are reviewing old cases, re-interviewing suspects and sources, trying to pick up clues about what might be coming. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr tells us Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff and others in the U.S. intelligence community believe the signs point to the possibility of a new attack on America.
The recent attacks on London and Glasgow, a deadly string of bombings in northern Africa,
and a relentless propaganda campaign from Al-Qaeda, which officials fear represents a renewed confidence.
All of this causes me in general to look at the summer as a time when we have somewhat more risk and we need to be very vigilant.
Al-Qaeda has a history of striking in summer months. The attack on America was launched in September. The British train bombings happened in July. And it was just last August when authorities uncovered a plot to blow up U.S.-bound airplanes.
Officials say there's no firm evidence of an imminent attack, but they worry about what they don't know. The funeral ceremonies for Lady Bird Johnson began this afternoon with a brief prayer service in Austin. CBS News correspondent Peter King was there.
A military honor guard carried her casket into the Great Hall of the LBJ Library and Museum.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
The memorial was short, private. Then an admiring public began to pay its last respects.
She was smart. She stood up for what she believed in. She was her own person, and she was a good wife at the same time. And she cared about things that mattered to other people, not just to her. And I think that makes her a hero.
Peter King, CBS News, Austin.
The former First Lady will be buried Sunday beside her husband at the LBJ Ranch. A jury in Chicago has found former Canadian media mogul Conrad Black guilty of stealing millions from the Hollinger International newspaper empire, but Black was acquitted of the most serious charge, racketeering, along with eight other counts. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Carl, don't panic, but there's a blue thing around your head. It appears to contain a hotel and some sort of savings message.
Oh, yeah. I just booked a last-minute summer vacation on Orbitz. Saved 30% on my hotel. Got a great room, too.
Oh. Yeah. That's what I figured. Can I touch it?
No.
Please.
No.
Book your last-minute vacation to select summer destinations and save up to 30% on your hotel. Book at Orbitz.com and stay a step ahead.
This Sunday,
are you ready to rock the house?
It's all new Celebrality on VH1 with Rock of Love starring Bret Michaels.
I am so in love with Bret Michaels.
And Scott Baio is 45 and single.
Who's the first person you ever had sex with?
Erin Moran.
Donnie Dillon.
Right!
VH1 is your Sunday night destination.
This rocks.
With a new Celebrality lineup, Rock of Love starring Bret Michaels and Scott Baio is 45 and single. Premieres this Sunday starting at 9, 8 central, only on VH1.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
And as with other antidotes, you must use it as directed and very carefully. The Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is taking your calls today, and you can join us whenever the urge strikes. 888-5-PETER-B, toll free. These are the Butler Brothers, Psychedelic Furs, called President Gas. And I want to dedicate this to the gut-free Michael Chertoff, who's been passing gas with these kind of, loosey-goosey. Well, my gut says Al-Qaeda's ready to attack again. Well, as somebody who has a little girth over the belt line, and Michael Chertoff doesn't, I say, dude, give us more than your gut, will ya? Joining us this half hour are two gentlemen who've been in the blogosphere for some time at mydd.com, and now they've teamed up with Mike Lux, a regular contributor to our program and a longtime progressive activist in Washington, to put up a new blog and website called openleft.com. We welcome Matt Stoller. Hello, Matt.
How you doing?
My pleasure. Good to have you joining us today. And Chris Bowers.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having us on.
Well, thanks for joining us. And can I just offer up a confession, first of all? I know a little bit about MyDD, but I never really have spent a lot of time there. So let's start off with MyDD and what your focus is and how that then has evolved into Open Left. Matt, you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. So Chris and I both were writers at the site called MyDD, and we focused on elections and partisan activism. And OpenLeft.com is a we've both left MyDD and have moved to OpenLeft.com to focus more on explicitly on ideology. After the 2006 election, I think, well, at least I believe strongly that it's important to start focusing on building a movement that has political power and can build coalitions across our various institutions and not just focus on elections, although elections are really important.
Mm-hmm.
The goal of OpenLeft.com is to focus on activism around political power for progressives in all its forms.
And, Chris, if you've moved from MyDD to Open Left, is that like moving from the living room to the kitchen?
I'm not sure if it's like moving from the living room to the kitchen. I've lived in apartments most of my life, so it's hard for me to conceptualize that difference. But I actually feel that it might be somewhat the opposite, where you're moving away from a less expansive place and into a more expansive place. And I don't mean that to take anything away from MyDD, but I think our movement from MyDD to Open Left is very much a step that progressives and the progressive movement is taking, where for a long time, especially in the early years of this decade, we were in a crisis situation with radical Republicans gaining more and more control over federal and local governments. And the first step towards taking the country back was to make sure that all progressives, moderates, Democrats, independents banded together to stop that, to put a halt to that. And so we've achieved that with the 2006 elections. And now we want to get more expansive, sort of go beyond just stopping the right. And we want to move towards a progressive governing majority, towards passing progressive legislation, and towards a more progressive culture within America as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And how do you define that thing, progressive? I saw a piece, and I think, Chris, you wrote it on Open Left the other day, where you analyzed the term progressive as it's used on the websites of Democratic presidential candidates.
Yes. Personally, I believe that the term progressive is a better alternative or a better opposite to the word conservative than the word liberal. Whereas conservatives have always found the golden age of the sort of ideal for society within the past, progressives find that in the future. Whereas conservatives are about maintaining the institutional status quo, progressives are about expanding it towards a broader participation in government, towards a more populist and accountable and open and transparent government. And in many other ways, progressive is the opposite of conservative, whereas the conservative versus liberal opposition is something that comes more from the Anglo-American tradition of politics, starting with the Whigs versus the Democrats in the early part of the 19th century, or even in Britain with the Tories versus the Liberal Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of almost a class distinction rather than a pure ideological one.
And Matt, do you share this parsing of the language and the term progressive?
Well, just for the record, Chris is way smarter than I am, so I want to put that out there.
Okay.
You know, for me, I see liberalism, progressivism, left-wing activism as about distributing power and wealth more equally in society. And right now, I think the right, the conservative movement, they want to centralize authority, power, wealth, and take away the right to speak, take away the right to act to be economically viable from anybody who doesn't operate and act like them. And so our goal is to break that model, break that ideology, and distribute power and wealth more equally. And when you do that, and kind of my metaphor for progressive ideals is the Internet, because the Internet is sort of the ultimate in terms of a level playing field, and there's just incredible innovation and creativity and community building that's going on the Internet that didn't exist before. Any community, I mean, from people who fetishize certain characters on the Transformers cartoon to, you know, people who are suffering with rare forms of cancer can find a place for themselves where they can where they can really relate to other people.
I'm still waiting. I'm sorry, I'm still waiting for somebody to explain the magic of Magic the Gathering. I bet there's a website that could help me.
No, the science fiction community actually has no presence on the Internet.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of weird.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, the Internet really works. Like, liberal ideas, liberal structures, progressive ideas, progressive structures work. They build things that are amazing, that unleash the capability of human creativity and human capacity for improvement and achievement values. And so, you know, the goal of what we're doing, the activism that we're doing at Open Left, is to bring that kind of systemic thinking into our other institutions.
That's Matt Stoller, and his colleague Chris Bowers is with us. We're talking about the new website, openleft.com. And what's the proper term? Is it a website? Is it a blog? It's you got a lot of video there. I mean, how do we define this creature? Let me give that one to Chris.
Sure. I think the term blog is growing a little bit less useful, especially for the five or six dozen group of progressive political websites that are in the so-called short head of the progressive blogosphere. That is the 50 or 60 websites that generate the lion's share of traffic and incoming links for progressives. Because the term blog arose very much from the idea of a personal site where there was only one person making content and they were putting up their thoughts because, you know, it was like a diary. It was an online diary, a web blog.
Yeah, and you imagine that person in their bathrobe as they're posting.
Yes, and you know, I've you know, if I had a nicer bathrobe, I would do that myself. But, you know, sometimes at home, I just blog for my pajamas. And I've never understood why that's supposed to be an insult against bloggers because, you know, what are you, jealous? I work from home in my pajamas. That's not pretty fun to me. But at the same time, most of these sort of top-level websites in terms of traffic and incoming links have expanded into group blogging, expanded into original reporting, almost mini activist organizations in many cases. And so the term blog doesn't really accurately describe them anymore. Many of them perhaps started as blogs, and so they're still called that. But the term is becoming less and less descriptive of a lot of the progressive political websites out there. So I've been more using the term website.
Okay. And, Matt, can you explain the on the homepage here, under blog role, you designate certain people as open left groups. Then there are new left groups. And then, in honor of Donald Rumsfeld and old Europe, we have the old left groups, which are, unions, and I don't know why the nation ends up there. But anyway, what was the decision here about how to divide these up and present them in this manner?
Well, actually a lot of people have taken old left as sort of an insult, and that actually wasn't at all the intention. My hypothesis about what's going on now is that there is a tremendous wave of institutional innovation going on that's building new institutional players for the left wing, and they're doing it online. They're doing it on open systems. And so I've sort of kind of called it the open left because to distinguish it from the new left, which was built, you know, when it institutionalized in the early 70s, on direct mail mass membership organizations.
And let me just give people a couple of examples under New Left: ACLU, Common Cause, Emily's List, NARAL, La Raza, Planned Parenthood, Public Citizen, Sierra Club.
Right, and I think the Sierra Club and ACLU were not created in the early 70s, but they based their institutional history or their institutional relationship to their members on direct mail. But we're still having an argument about that.
Okay.
But then old left are largely unions and some of the early civil rights groups who and have a direct role in the economic welfare of their members. And it's not, it's not an insult to be an old left organization. I think probably the most important era of progressive change in this country happened in the 1930s and 40s. And the old left institutions that are around from that time period are sort of the backbone of the progressive movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the new left organizations introduced their own innovations in the political system, and then we're introducing our own. And we have sort of a different relationship with stakeholders, and we want to explore that and figure out how to effectively work together on open systems. I don't know if that clarifies it, but that's kind of where I'm coming from with that.
It explains it. I'll let listeners decide if it's clear.
I'm sure that I'm going to get a lot of angry. Go to openleft.com and
straighten him out.
Your feedback.
Yeah. Matt Stoller with us. Chris Bowers, too. Openleft.com is this new website. You got a question or comment? Join us. We'll see if we can overload the phone system here. We'll continue in just a moment. My toll-free number, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
Two great Chinese restaurants, two great locations, one great American name.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Personally, I love the chow fun noodles. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117 for a great takeout.
Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale is a local treasure. Jim's owner and chef, Stephen Lowe, has over 20 years of experience in renowned San Francisco restaurants. Chef Lowe provides his loyal clientele with the best of East meets West, including the finest steaks in Monterey County. Chef Lowe enhances classic American and Chinese dishes with delicious French and Italian entrees and sauces. Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale transcends categories with a unique pace-setting menu and family-friendly prices. Jim's in Prunedale is open daily for lunch and dinner. Stop by 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road or call Chef Stephen Lowe at 663-4888 for carryout to die for.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the Secret Garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are telling you a little bit about traffic right now. And we are going to mention the fact that we do have a problem working. It is in Ben Lomond on Highway 9 southbound after Brackney. Two-vehicle crash on the right shoulder. Looks like we have a serious injury crash in Morgan Hill. It's southbound 101 at Cochran. Three cars involved. Paramedics, fire department on the way to the scene. Rio Del Mar, Highway 1 southbound at Freedom Boulevard. Large tire tread blocking lanes there. Hollister, John Smith Road at Fairview. We have a large bull, reportedly loose, running outside the fenced area. Animal control crews are on the way to the scene there. You don't hear about that every day. And that's the track.
We can continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking about a brand new website called openleft.com. And this portion of the Peter B. Collins Show is brought to you by the Grand Old Party.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, hey, we're Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
daily.
You know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news.
Yeah, if they put a BS detector on the nightly news every time Bush gave a news conference, now that would be interesting. And I'd like to see Frank Luntz present it. We're talking with two guys who used to be at MyDD.com, Matt Stoller and Chris Bowers, now over at OpenLeft.com. And Mike Lux is their co-conspirator there. He was on with us earlier this week. We're joined by Laird in Eureka, who's got an interesting question. Go, Laird.
Yeah, it's pretty well known that the conservative radio outweighs the so-called liberal or a progressive radio.
Nine to one, yeah.
I've been noticing that the web seems to have more progressive sites than conservative sites. Is that wishful thinking on my part?
Well, you've never been to World Nut Daily.
Well, sometimes I feel like a nut.
Matt, you go first.
The web is sort of perfectly situated for liberals, and a lot of people who have become politically aware in the last 9 years have gone to the Internet to understand how to take action in politics. And for whatever reason, liberals are just better at using the Internet for political power than conservatives. And I think it has to do with a mix of things. One, we had no other channels to organize. Two, we're kind of the creative class, internet users who live in areas with high internet penetration. And three, something about the web, the open discourse, the open systems is just better suited for an ideology that's pluralistic, among people who like to argue and who like to debate ideas.
Mm-hmm. But when it comes to traffic, is it, what's the breakdown?
I can field that one.
Chris, go ahead.
Sure. When blogging first started getting big about 4 or 5 years ago, conservatives actually had about a 2-to-1 edge over liberals, conservative websites had about a 2-to-1 edge over progressive websites. But by mid 2005, that had turned around, so it was a 3-to-1 progressive edge. And so it is absolutely true that within the blogosphere, so called, progressives/liberals. Have a decided edge in traffic and audience over conservatives. And with the explosion of local progressive blogosphere, there's also a definite edge in terms of the number of websites on progressive ends.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you could count something like, what's it called? The Drudge Report,
yeah.
which I'm sure some people have heard of, unfortunately,
yeah.
as sort of part of the conservative online presence. And if you count that, that makes up a lot of the ground.
Yeah, all right. Laird, thank you for a great, great question. Gentlemen, just about a minute and a half, and I wanted to ask you each to weigh in on something that's been quite controversial this week on this program. Cindy Sheehan announced that she wants to challenge Nancy Pelosi in her congressional seat in San Francisco unless Pelosi allows impeachment to go forward. And while I sympathize with her goals and I'm firmly in favor of impeachment, I have said, honestly, that I think that this is a mistake and that Cindy doesn't have the leverage to threaten Pelosi, and therefore it's an empty threat, and it will simply result in her being ignored. Let me hear your take on it. First, Chris Bowers.
Well, Peter, I certainly agree with your analysis that sometimes if you throw all your resources at a fight that you can't win and that you might end up being embarrassed in, it could end up being a net negative to your cause. But my concern with what she's doing, it focuses more on the way it seems to be willfully dispensing with the idea of coalition building. The Democratic Party is not something that it's not an ideological organization. It doesn't have any stated beliefs. It doesn't have any stated goals. All it is a vessel, a filter that allows a broad coalition to form. And if she's specifically ignoring that coalition and not challenging Nancy Pelosi in a primary, but rather running as a third-party candidate, she's not signaling a willingness to build a broader coalition around her issues.
Matt, 20 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I basically agree. there's a lot of leverage within the Democratic Party. Progressive primary challengers from the left are good. They move the party in our direction. They create pressure on lawmakers to vote better. Challenges outside of the party don't.
Yeah. I also think that it opens up a perceived attack from Pelosi's left that only can encourage the right. Gentlemen, I will see you at openleft.com. Matt Stoller, Chris Bowers, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks a lot.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay. Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. This is Dave Ross, and for Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. While we're keeping the terrorists bottled up in Iraq, it turns out that anybody who wants to make a dirty bomb can set up a company and just start gathering radioactive material.
We were able to obtain a genuine NRC license using bogus documents.
Thank goodness those terrorists are bottled up. More after this.
Is your credit score holding you back? Are you paying more for everything just because you don't have perfect credit? Well, it's not your fault. Credit card companies are doing everything they can to keep you in debt and never let you escape. But I've got a system that can fix your credit score once and for all. And I'm going to send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system today.
My credit score is now 758. My wife and I are shouting for joy right now.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't just fix your credit score, it will permanently rebuild your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have.
Our credit score was in the low 600s and now we're at 780.
You can wipe the slate clean once and for all. Call right now and I'll rush you my free tape. For your free tape, call 1-800-401-7899. That's 1-800-401-7899. 1-800-401-7899.
The dirty bomb scenario involves a terrorist getting enough radioactive material to contaminate a large city and effectively shut it down. But for that to work, you have to find enough nuclear material. Thank goodness that material is carefully regulated. Or is it? Congressional investigators decided to check and set up a bogus company with only a West Virginia postal box.
In March of 2007, 28 days after making our application, we received our NRC license.
Investigator Gregory Kutz of the Government Accountability Office. This license from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission allowed them to buy enough radioactive material for a small dirty bomb. And Republican Senator Norm Coleman said they could have gotten as much as they wanted.
Using ordinary computer software that any teenager could use to remove the restrictions on the amount of radiological materials permitted under the license.
Nobody at the nuclear agency checked whether the company was legit. In fact, a government official, knowing what an annoyance paperwork could be, even helped fill out the application form. Now, it's not as if you can just buy raw radioactive material. This license allowed the purchase of portable moisture density gauges, which operate using highly radioactive isotopes. Purchase enough of these things, and you could cannibalize enough radioactive material to cause havoc. But each one costs $5,000, and you'd have to have pretty deep pockets, which would mean you'd have to come from Saudi Arabia or something. And how likely is that? Anyway, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission says it's fixed the problem, which is good. And one other good sign. When the investigators tried getting a purchase license to the state of Maryland, which is allowed to handle its own nuclear licenses, Maryland officials actually wanted to visit the company. Darn meddling bureaucrats. The Osgood File, Dave Ross, on the CBS Radio Network.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, coming up about a half hour away. It's our election protection hour, as we do every week. Brad Friedman's taking some time off so he can get all charged up. He'll be filling in for me when I go on vacation starting next week. So you'll hear him next week on the Peter B. Collins Show. Mark Crispin Miller, another election activist, the author of Fooled Again, The Real Case for Electoral Reform, and he teaches media at NYU. He'll be covering for Brad coming up next hour, right here on the PBC Show. At Thursday's news conference, President Bush had a couple of unguarded moments, or at least, maybe he said some things while he was trying to think of something better to say. But among his remarks, he commented for the first time, really, about the Scooter Libby case. And he had these kind of wistful thoughts about, gosh, what if somebody had come forward and really explained all this to me before we had a prosecutor and an investigation and a conviction and all that? And it was just stunning, because he appeared completely detached from the idea that as president, he could order the people who work for him, to come into his office and answer questions. And that he could have gotten to the bottom of this within weeks of the outing of Valerie Plame's identity as a CIA operative. But it's time to move on from that. He also, in an unguarded moment, talked about that this is an ugly war, and that he knows the American people are suffering from war fatigue. And to help us understand this a little better, we turn to Satyam Khanna, research associate for the Progress Report and thinkprogress.org over there at the Center for American Progress in Washington, a colleague of our buddy Faz Shakir. Satyam, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
So what was your first reaction when you heard the president acknowledge war fatigue?
Well, the first thing I thought is that I certainly have some war fatigue, and I was pretty offended by it. But it doesn't surprise me. You know, basically President Bush has been dismissing the polls for as long as this war has happened. And, I think it's come to the point where you have to ask, when is he going to ever listen to what the public has to say? Because right now, I think about 66%, maybe 67% now, are disapproving of the war. The war is the biggest reason why President Bush's rating is now about the same level as Richard Nixon. And yet he still won't listen. He still won't withdraw troops. And I think it's at the point now where there's some serious problems with how he perceives the public.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I have is BS fatigue. Because this president has tried to, spin and shape and dissemble and outright lie to the American people about what's going on, his motives, who our enemies are. And even this week, this Thursday, there he was once again trying to, persuade the American people that Al-Qaeda is the real problem in Iraq, and that Iraq is the central front in the war on Al-Qaeda. And everybody knows that there were like three people from Al-Qaeda in Iraq before we invaded, and they weren't even really directly connected to Osama bin Laden. And to the extent that there are Al-Qaeda-related direct operatives in Iraq, it is the fault of the Bush administration. It's not as if, this is something that existed before we invaded and occupied, and, we got to fix it for that reason. He caused it, but he never can quite really explain that part of it.
Yeah, that's certainly true. What's interesting is that, President Bush says that as soon as we leave, or if we do leave Iraq, he says that it'll be a power vacuum and Al-Qaeda will take over in Iraq. But, that's already happened, and there's already a civil war there, and Al-Qaeda's taking part in it. And I think the interesting part is Al-Qaeda is only responsible for about 10% of the violence in Iraq. The rest of it is sectarian violence. The rest of it is Shias fighting Shia, Shias fighting Sunnis, and vice versa. And so we're not facing, Bush likes to think of it as like we're facing one enemy in Iraq, and you know we're actually facing multiple enemies. And you know, like you said, we've created the enemies. They weren't there before. None of those people were trying to bomb us in the first place. But he's certainly been fear-mongering the past couple of months. And, you know, there was one speech where he mentioned al-Qaeda, I think, about 25 times recently. And, you know, he doesn't mention the Sunnis. He doesn't mention the Shias. He mentions al-Qaeda. And the reason why he does that is because al-Qaeda was responsible for September 11th. And there's certainly something to be said for the fact that Saddam Hussein was trying to get Osama bin Laden in the beginning. Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were enemies.
Yeah.
But now Bush is saying that the same people who are killing us in Iraq now are the ones responsible for September 11th. It's a perfect lie.
And Satya, I mean, it's just amazing to me because it appears that there's nobody who's really monitoring, nobody on the president's team, who's really monitoring the confused gibberish that comes out of his mouth. And so on the one hand, he's asked to respond to Michael Chertoff's gut feeling, and he's a gutless guy, and I say that as a compliment because I've got a weight problem and he doesn't. Michael Chertoff is saying his gut tells him that there might be an al-Qaeda attack on America or our interests this summer. And Bush tries to play that down a little, by saying that, well, we're safer than we were before 9/11 and that we've substantially degraded the al-Qaeda operation. What he doesn't say is that we, by invading Iraq, have helped recruit and energize a whole new generation of al-Qaeda volunteers, some of whom may not even report in on the satellite phone to the cave there in North Waziristan, who just take it upon themselves to load some propane in the car and maybe see if they can blow up a Glasgow airport or something like that.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is that there was an intelligence report, I think about a month and a half ago, it was private intelligence report to Congress, and it said that we're now killing al-Qaeda slower than they're regenerating. And you know, at the rate it's going, we're not going to ever be able to get rid of al-Qaeda because the way they now perceive Iraq to be a rallying point and to be something that they enjoy. And now al-Qaeda is enjoying killing American troops in Iraq. And so this has served as a rallying point for them, and President Bush doesn't realize that. President Bush thinks that, well, since President Bush is now viewing the al-Qaeda in Iraq idea as an opportunity for him to drum up support for the war. So now that al-Qaeda is there, he's saying, oh, well, now that al-Qaeda is here, it's more reason for us to stay because they're dangerous. But they're dangerous because we're there.
Well, and he didn't quite use the precise language that they've been drumming into us for the last couple of years, but he trotted out that old tired argument, well, I'd rather fight them over there than fight them somewhere else.
Yeah, and you know what? Now, like you said, they're trying to fight us over here now. And it seems like the sort of catch-22 he's put himself in. He wants to fight them over there, but the longer he stays over there, the more they want to fight us over here.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Satyam Khanna from thinkprogress.org, among the many websites there at the Center for American Progress. And late in the week here on Friday, news is breaking that maybe the war fatigue is affecting Republicans because John Warner has finally gone public in tandem with Richard Lugar, who spoke up a couple of weeks ago. And they're planning to introduce a measure to basically force the president's hand. Lugar said, I continue to counsel the president and his administration to move now to construct a more sustainable policy in Iraq that reduces our troop commitments and transitions away from the missions of interposing ourselves between sectarian factions. Now, this is very polite and quite diplomatic on the part of Lugar and Warner, but it's also coupled with something that Warner has been talking about for a year and a half, and that is that the original authorization to use military force in Iraq, passed in the fall of 2002, no longer bears any resemblance to the situation on the ground, and it should be rewritten, and American troop deployments there should be reauthorized. Now, I think that's fascinating coming from such a senior Republican, and I think that this presents a real conundrum for the president. What's your thought?
Well, now you're seeing more and more Republicans leaving the party ranks, and you're seeing some more divisions. I think John Boehner, who is the House Minority Leader, referred to the Republicans who left his party, as far as the war is concerned, as wimps. So that's some harsh language. As funny as it is, he's calling his own party, who he's counting on for votes, a wimp, which is disrespectful, and which is not, you know, diplomatic language. So there's some real problems in the Republican Party break over the war, and because it's really because the war is so grossly unpopular. If you remember, a couple of months ago, there were 11 Republican senators who went to President Bush's office and basically berated him and told him that you are a burden on the party because of this war. You need to figure a way to get out. Now, not all those Republicans have voted the way they should have voted, but the fact is that they were disgruntled, and now you're seeing that in action. I think about 4 Republicans left party ranks today on a key Iraq vote, and you know, you see the Lugar and Warner legislation. While it doesn't call for a firm withdrawal date as, you know, as we would like, it certainly is a step forward. And Warner's been, you know, an outspoken opponent of the war in the Republican Party for, you know, a couple of years, about a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
This is a welcome step, and while it's not as far as I would like it to be, but I think, you know, reauthorizing the war or changing the authorization of the war is a step forward the Republican Party. And I think more people, you'll find, in the next couple of weeks will join them.
But I share that, you know, John Murtha expressed great optimism this week, too, about the shift that he sees among the Republicans. And I'm guardedly optimistic, but I'm also concerned that many of these Republicans, and I keep a little cheat sheet in front of me here, people like Lamar Alexander, Domenici of New Mexico, Mitch McConnell, they're reading their voters, and they know that they need to do something different. But they're not willing to support even the softest of the Democratic proposals that include benchmarks, timelines, and a start of a troop withdrawal in 120 days from passage. And so I'm concerned that we may be in a stalemate situation for a long time where Republican senators mouth rhetoric that is more moderate and distances them from the White House while they continue to vote to support the president's worst policies.
Yeah, they're certainly seeking political comfort in this idea of going against the war but not really going against the war. So they're able to cater to both bases of their party, the more moderate base being the ones that are calling for a little bit change in course in the war, and the more hardline base, which is calling for, you know, us to stay. So, you know, Senator Salazar and Senator Alexander introduced legislation recently to implement the results of the Iraq Study Group as real U.S. policy. And the Iraq Study Group was certainly, you know, a step forward in the past. That was in November. But now, you know, things have changed a lot since the escalation. The violence has gotten worse. Sectarian violence has gotten terrible. And the United States really isn't able to implement the same plan as they would have before the escalation. And that's the problem for that legislation. And also, that legislation, again, doesn't call for a firm withdrawal date.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, this is the more moderate Republicans like Lugar, Alexander, Salazar is actually a Democrat.
Yeah.
But those more moderate senators are actually hurting the prospect for a firm withdrawal date because they're threatening to pull votes from more moderate Democrats or into this legislation, which is sort of neutered.
Yeah, no, we've got some serious problems, for example, and just to pick a couple, the Nelson brothers, who aren't really brothers, Ben and Bill Nelson from Florida, they are so damn moderate. I mean, they're part of the Lieberman wing of the United States Senate.
He's created his own wing, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, if Cheney can have a fourth branch, Lieberman can have his own wing.
That's true. We're all entitled to our own branch of government,
yeah.
Then, right?
Satyam, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Absolutely, thanks.
And people can read more about his comments on war fatigue at thinkprogress.org. We're going to take a break and return because there has been a savage attack from a right-wing talk show host on Latinos. We'll share that with you and some reaction coming up next. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi. Hi, Sheila Gale here with 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Addiction and Recovery Talk, Saturdays 4 to 5, now expanding to Wednesday evenings 7 to 8. Taking shame and blame out of addiction, we take responsibility and treat it as the disease that it is. Great guests and great call-ins. Addictions, 12-Step Talk, it's about time. Now twice a week, Wednesday evenings 7 to 8 and Saturdays 4 to 5. Brought to you by Sun Street Centers, building healthy lives in Monterey County. Sun Street for recovery and prevention.
Yeah. Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show, every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., and I want to tell you about my experiences with Monterey Salinas Transit's Bus 55. I personally have taken the bus a couple of times to fly out of the San Jose Airport. What a great way to spend $8 and avoid the headaches of driving, parking, driving, and messing with the San Jose commute. Check out Bus 55 at www.mst.org. I know it works. Bus 55, Monterey to San Jose, runs three times a day. It works.
Time there going into that break, and I think we're all back.
I can't find nothing on the radio. Y'all turn to that station.
Oh, no, not that station. That's a right-wing hate talk station. Watch out. I think they've got Michael Savage over there.
World is collapsing around our ears. I turned up the radio.
In the San Francisco Bay Area, a group of immigrant activists are outraged and calling for the firing of Michael Savage, who conducts a hateful radio talk show that disgracefully is distributed to hundreds of radio stations around the country, including those formerly owned by ABC Disney and lots of stations owned by an alleged Christian commercial broadcaster called Salem Communications. And I'm about to play for you. I want to warn you that this is quite distasteful. But I imagine that many listeners to the Peter B. Collins Show never have heard Michael Savage, or if they have, they're so repulsed that they don't spend much time listening to what he has to say on the radio. And this is just one example of the daily vitriol that crosses the line from free expression under the First Amendment, in my opinion, to hateful commentary that I don't believe should be banned, but I believe broadcasters have a responsibility not to air it. Yet they do, with the same thought as a pornographer, that, well, I personally don't like this, or I might not do this, or think this, or say this, but how can I resist the money we make on something like this. All right, here's a clip from Michael Savage.
Then there's the story of college students who are fasting out here in the Bay Area. They're illegal aliens, and they want green cards simply because they're students. I don't understand how this two and two adds up. Well, I would say let them fast till they starve to death, then it solves the problem. Because then we won't have a problem about giving them green cards, because they're illegal aliens, they don't belong here to begin with. They broke into the country, they're criminals. Why do I owe them a green card? Because they're going to my colleges for free? This makes no sense at all. Listen to clip 11.
Nalali and four other students want Congress to pass an immigration reform bill that includes the DREAM Act, a clause that would give undocumented college graduates the opportunity to become legal. They are fasting for 4 days to show solidarity.
We have engineers who are still waiters, and they're just waiting for the DREAM Act to be enacted so they can become engineers. We have pre-med students.
We don't need you as an engineer. Go back where you came from. Go back to where you came from and be an engineer. That's all. Go give your talents to your home country. Go be an engineer there. You stole the education from us. Now give it back to your home country. Go make a bomb where you came from.
So, this is unbelievable. I do not consider this to be simply nativist commentary or amusing appeals to American nationalism. It's misinformed. It's inaccurate. And it's downright hateful. And Savage does this on a daily basis. And major radio companies profit handsomely from his ravings. We turn now to Mark Silverman. He's an attorney with the Immigration Legal Resources Center. Thanks for joining us here on short notice today, Mark.
Okay. I couldn't have said it better myself. He's completely inaccurate factually. First of all, we have a broken immigration system that needs fixing, and the undocumented immigrants are a symptom of a broken system. They're not the cause of it, and much less the children that I met last week who entered when they were 1, 2, and 3 years old are now graduating from UCLA. We're importing engineers from India, and we have engineering students graduating who happen to be, for no fault of their own, undocumented immigrants. And then the other issue, you know, hate speech, I guess, is protected by the First Amendment. We're not saying it's not, but we're saying it has no place in our airways. It has no place in our public discourse. We're not a nation where our discourse and our culture should be filled with hate.
And Mark Silverman, a point that I made back when Don Imus got in trouble for the nappy-headed hose comment, which right. was certainly tasteless, distasteful, and offensive, it's not nearly as mean-spirited, cruel, and downright uninformed as these kinds of comments that come from Michael Savage. And again, I want to be clear. There are a lot of people out there who have heard recently the critique that, the right-wingers dominate talk radio by 9 to 1, and that people like me want to regulate them out of business. That's not true. What we want is fairness in the media, and if it takes regulation to get there, I would accept it. But fundamentally, broadcasters have a responsibility not to profit from hateful speech. And they are abrogating that responsibility, and somebody's got to bring that to their attention and get them to change.
You're absolutely right. And in fact, there was the fairness doctrine that was applied until 1987, I guess during the Reagan administration, got rid of it, which actually required two sides of a discussion or a debate to be aired by a station.
Mm-hmm.
And that really needs to, at first, hate talk of hate needs to be gone completely. People were asking, demanding that Savage be fired. Secondly, at the least, the fairness doctrine needs to be reinvigorated so two sides of the story can be heard.
Well, I would like to see something that addresses that. I worked under the original fairness doctrine, and it was quite limiting. And what I'd like to see is that broadcasters have to prove to the FCC at license renewal that they presented a diverse range of views to their audience. And I will tag myself as a liberal or a progressive, and Savage can call himself a conservative, language, borders, and culture if he wants. But we simply need to come up with some mechanism that doesn't censor people, but that requires broadcasters to present diverse viewpoints.
I do that. I agree completely, and I'm going to contact your producer to try and communicate with you by email or something to get some ideas from you. I'm an immigration lawyer, and I need some help with it.
All right, well.
I think you're right on target.
Well, Mark, my email is peter@peterbcollins.com. It's easy. Go ahead and use it, and I'll be happy to conspire with you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, and I appreciate your work on this issue.
Thank you. Bye now.
That's Mark Silverman, and as we mentioned, he's an attorney with the Immigrant Legal Resources Center in San Francisco. This is a group of San Jose State students who participated in a hunger strike, and they're calling for Clear Channel and other stations to drop the Michael Savage program. And again, if Don Imus got fired for the nappy-headed hoe comment, go to MediaMatters.org. Click on the Michael Savage link, and until you puke, listen to the stuff that he says every day. It pales in comparison. We're going to take a break for top of the hour of the news and return with an hour of election protection coverage. Mark Crispin Miller covers for Brad Friedman today. That's next on the Peter B. Collins Show. Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush now faces a challenge from within his own party over Iraq war strategy. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports on a new proposal in the Senate.
The measure from Republican Senators Dick Lugar and John Warner clearly indicates the turmoil Iraq is causing in Republican ranks, but stops far short of forcing President Bush to change course. It would declare the initial congressional approval for the war obsolete and require the administration to report to Congress on plans to get combat troops out of the role of policing sectarian violence and starting to withdraw them. But it would not actually require those plans be used.
Iraqi leaders, criticized for their lack of progress on political and economic reform, are planning a long vacation. CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod has that.
The White House confirmed that the Iraqi parliament will be taking the month of August off.
It looks like they may, yeah, just like the U.S. Congress is.
Have you tried to talk them out of that?
You know, it's 130 degrees in Baghdad in August. I'll pass on your recommendation.
A reporter pointed out, it'll be 130 degrees for the U.S. troops as well. But the fact remains that with 8 weeks to go until a second critically important report measuring the Iraqis' ability to make progress they've yet to demonstrate, their parliament will be on vacation for four of them.
The Pentagon acknowledges serious problems with the Iraqi military, saying the number of combat-ready battalions has actually decreased from 10 to just 6. The signs are troubling. Nothing concrete, but U.S. intelligence officials say a rejuvenated al-Qaeda seems poised to attempt a new attack inside the United States, and they're worried about what they don't know. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr says the worry started in earnest after the attempted car bombings in Britain.
They tell us there's been a great surge in the number of reports that they've been forced to chase after London. They're running down all those leads. They're looking at cell phone records, looking for any connections between those terror suspects and people here. So far, they haven't found them, but they're still looking.
An Indian doctor detained in Australia after the failed British bombings has now been charged with providing support to a terrorist organization. The U.S. Senate today voted to double the bounty on Osama bin Laden to $50 million. British soccer phenom David Beckham officially made his U.S. debut today. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman was there.
They were chanting and cheering in Los Angeles, all for a soccer player.
As you know, we're all here today to welcome David Beckham to the Galaxy family.
David Beckham is the man Major League Soccer is betting millions of dollars on. They hope he can make soccer part of the mainstream sports scene. Beckham says he will try.
In my career, I've always looked for challenges. And again, this is one that I'm really looking forward to.
And this is just the build-up. Beckham doesn't play his first game until next weekend. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
The Dow gained another 45 points to finish the week at 13,907. The Nasdaq up 5 points today. This is CBS News.
The new Die Hard Platinum presents Under the Hood with Positive and Negative.
Hey, Negative, you see what Bob just installed in the back seat for the kids?
Muzzles, I hope.
No, DVD monitors. Isn't that cool?
Great. First the GPS, now DVD players and monitors. It's a lot of juice for us to pump out.
What, can't handle it?
Look, if Bob wants to install a chandelier for a dome light, I can handle it.
The new Die Hard Platinum battery with Evolution Technology. Available at Sears and Sears.com/platinum. More starting power, more reserve power. Die Hard. Spiral AGM batteries.
Reason number 22 to switch to Geico. We think renters are cool. Now, we don't know if you were born cool or if it's just all the cool stuff you have in your apartment. The point is, if you want to protect your considerable coolness, ask Geico about renter's insurance. For as little as $12 a month, you can protect all the stuff you hold near and dear. Including that combination flat-screen TV espresso machine. Now that is cool.
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Police in Suffolk County, New York, have charged two boys, 17 and 15, with plotting a Columbine-style attack at their high school. WCBS Radio's Sophia Hall has the story.
Authorities say the 15-year-old was the mastermind. He tried to purchase weapons like an Uzi on the internet, and he made videos describing his rage towards other students, and the 60 pages of his journal had disturbing quotes.
I would start a chain of terrorism in the world, and as a picture of a pipe bomb.
Suffolk Police Commissioner Richard Dormer says the two suspects worked at McDonald's together. The two were caught when an unknown woman found the 15-year-old's journal in the parking lot. Police believe the 15-year-old accidentally dropped it.
They allegedly plan to carry out their attack next April on the 9th anniversary of Columbine. A 21-year-old North Carolina man has been sentenced to a year in jail for speeding on Interstate 81. Police clocked his motorcycle at 160 miles per hour. He crashed after taking an exit but wasn't hurt. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
The new Die Hard Platinum presents Under the Hood with Positive and Negative.
Hey, we're the new Die Hard Platinum battery. My name is Positive. Negative, introduce yourself.
What's the point?
Well, so we can tell people that we have 40% more reserve capacity.
Yeah, and our Evolution technology can power all sorts of gadgets for your car.
Well, I think it's something to be proud of.
Yes, you're beaming, and it's giving me a migraine.
The new Die Hard Platinum battery with Evolution technology. Available at Sears and Sears.com/platinum. More starting power, more reserve power. Die Hard. Spiral AGM batteries.
Hey, Dave. Mike here. Hey, this afternoon at around 2:27, the plumbing is going to back up with a lot of grayish, goopy stuff. It'll all overflow onto the tile floor and make a nice little safety hazard. Cool? Anyway, just thought you should know.
In your job, you don't get warnings. So Grainger's just added thousands of new plumbing products to help get you through whatever the day brings. We're adding products and removing problems. Valves, fittings, fixtures, toilets, water heaters, whatever it takes. Call or visit your local branch or go online to Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. And every week, we devote an hour to election integrity, election protection. Because we need it. And our regular go-to guy has gone on vacation. He deserves it. Brad Friedman took the day off today, and he is charging up because starting next week, he'll be sitting in for me, actually for about 8 days. That'll be two Thursdays and Fridays for our listeners in Portland, Oregon. And so Brad will be covering and broadening his scope beyond election issues, but I'm sure you'll get a daily dose of that from his Bradness. And I'm delighted to cover the topic today. We turn to Mark Crispin Miller. He is a professor of media studies at New York University. He's the author of Fooled Again. It's out in a brand new edition with over 100 pages of new material. Fooled Again, subtitled The Real Case for Electoral Reform. Professor, welcome to our program today.
Hey, great to be with you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again, too, Mark. And let me start off just by giving you a little encouragement, because you and Brad Friedman and a number of others have been tirelessly trying to educate people about the problems with the Holt bill. And I want to talk about that as we kick off this segment today. But I got an email thread that just came in this morning from a listener who tunes in online in San Francisco. He describes himself as a retired attorney, and we'll just use his initials, RR. So he posted a comment at the website of People for the American Way, and it reads like this: as a longtime PFAW member, I am extremely disturbed and disappointed at PFAW's active endorsement and lobbying for the flawed Holt voting reform bill. Moreover, I think your messages are misleading and prejudicial to your credibility. The Holt bill could and should be amended in ways suggested by, for example, Bev Harris and Brad Friedman before it is submitted to a congressional vote. So he posted that on the 10th of July, and at PFAW it took a couple of days, but on the 13th he got a response. Hello, thank you for sharing your thoughts. Hearing your concerns is helpful. While many major civil rights and voting organizations, progressive advocacy organizations, and voting technology experts support H.R. 811, some similar groups and individuals have a different take. Ultimately, people of goodwill will sometimes disagree. In this case, substantive policy differences and differing interpretations of the legislation are the reason. And she goes on to state, it kind of repeats the PFAW position, and it's a very limited basis, I think, that they're supporting 811, pinning it on the disability community.
Right.
And saying that this is the main reason why we can't ban DREs. They also make the statement without any substantiation that if you included a DRE ban in the legislation, that it wouldn't pass. So let's start with this, Mark Crispin Miller. We have succeeded in educating some Americans about the problems with the Holt bill. The people we're having trouble educating appear to be the members who are likely to vote for it.
Well, that's exactly right. And my own experience with people in PFAW and Common Cause and Move On is that they actually don't know what's now in the bill. I mean, it sounds like a harsh thing to say, but I've been struck, and other activists have been struck, by the fact that they don't seem to realize that since the bill was marked up in committee about a month ago, it is much worse than it was before. Now, I've never been a supporter of the bill for the reasons you've given and for the reasons Brad and Bev have given, because it does, basically attach printers to DRE machines, and I believe we should get rid of the machines. However, if we're going to have machines, it is infinitely preferable to have the software be available to the public, for anybody in the public, for close scrutiny. That's what H.R. 811 did say until about a month ago. Since then, the bill has been changed radically. Now, only what the bill defines as qualified persons can look at the software, and those persons must sign non-disclosure agreements, which have very strict penalties for violation. Now, what this means is that those people who will be permitted to look at the software will actually be unable to blow the whistle if they find anything in the software that's suspicious. I have it on excellent authority, in fact, directly from Rush Holt's own counsel, Michelle Mulder. She had a kind of an email exchange with a bunch of us, which, as far as I can recall, was the first time that anyone from Holt's office would even talk to the people who had qualms about the bill. She said, apparently without realizing how outrageous this was, that the reason why trade secrecy now trumps democracy in the bill is that Microsoft, I'm quoting her now, Microsoft and others in the proprietary software industry had serious problems with that original language, and so Holt changed the bill at their request. But by others in the proprietary software industry, she can only mean Diebold ESNS. There's a company called Avante International that's in Holt's district that is now trying to seize monopoly control of paper trail technology. All of this is on my blog at markcrispinmiller.com. You may know the name Rebecca Mercury. She's a very respected computer expert. She worked closely with Holt on this bill. She is now fervently opposed to the bill. She is intimately acquainted with Avante International's machinations. She has a piece out today on Op-Ed News. The fact is that people are not aware that the bill that they think they're talking about is a radically different bill from what it was a month ago, and the bill, therefore, that PFAW and MoveOn and Common Cause are all stubbornly supporting is extremely dangerous, because if it passes, it will mean that Congress has, for the first time in our history, legitimized secret vote counting by making this change that I described. Now, there are other serious problems with H.R. 811 that have been there all along.
Well, hold on. I want to drill in a little further on this, because this fascinates me, Mark, that Holt's top aide would admit this.
Yeah.
But as I read the item a couple of days ago, it struck me that she was saying, gosh, they came and lobbied us, and you didn't.
Yeah, right. And it was very annoying, because we've been trying to lobby them. When I say we, I mean the community of people who are in, you know, election reform activists who've always had problems with the bill. We've been trying to lobby them forever, and they refuse to talk to us. This, you know, lest some of your listeners' eyes are crossing because this is becoming somewhat technical, let me just say here that the basic point is that Congress is supposed to be there to serve the interests of the people. This should be too obvious for me even to have to say it. The people should not be unwittingly at war with corporate interests that want to privatize our election, and we should not be in a situation where Holt's office is actually listening to the likes of Diebold and Microsoft and Avante and not telling anyone about it until we, you know, happen to have an email exchange with Rush Holt's counsel, and she mentions, oh, by the way, they came and talked to us and you didn't, so, you know, take it up with Microsoft. She actually said that.
Yeah.
So,
And should we rename the bill, Leave No Voting Machine Vendor Behind?
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. Now, just as a point of information, Avante is trying to exert monopoly control over paper trail technology, which they did not invent, but they're trying to do that anyway, and they're now suing Diebold and ESNS for patent violation. It's a real sewer. But the person to talk to about this is Rebecca Mercury, who knows it like the back of her hand. The point is, you know, this whole discussion, this whole episode is taking place in the wrong universe. It's taking place in a universe where corporations have special access to the people's representatives and basically get what they want. Meanwhile, those of us who are concerned about the, you know, integrity of the democratic system have to fight, have to struggle with a guy who, you know, defines himself as Mr. Election Reform, even to get a hearing. It's really ridiculous. The long and short of it is that your listeners must call their congressional representatives as soon as possible, email them, do whatever it takes, and say, you know, if this bill comes up for a vote, which it may do any day now, okay, insist that it be delayed. We must have public hearings. We must have a public discussion of what should be in this bill and what should not be in this bill. If they can't get the bill delayed, they should vote against it. It's really as simple as that. We're being rushed, as it were, to acceptance of a bill that's completely unacceptable in a democracy.
Mark Crispin Miller with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's with us for the whole hour, so if you'd like to call in with a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 1-888-573-8372. He mentioned his website, markcrispinmiller.com. Mark has a K, and Crispin is C-R-I-S-P-I-N. I urge you to take a visit there. And, Mark, can anybody sign up for your listserv? I really appreciate all the material that you send out.
Yeah, all they need to do is email me, which they can do through the through the blog. And basically what that means is that you will get emails of the things that end up on the blog anyway. But if you want an early crack at that stuff, just get on my list.
Well, it's nice because you push it out to me, and I don't always remember to go to every website that I should visit
exactly.
on a daily basis, so it's very helpful.
I feel the same way about that.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return. 888-5 Peter B. is our toll-free number. Professor Mark Crispin Miller with us this hour. Maybe you've read his book, Fooled Again, The Real Case for Election Reform. It's out in softcover in an updated edition with an extra 100 pages of content, and I recommend it to you. We'll take a break and return right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Tangled in Traffic, support brought to you by the History Channel. Fly along with them for the ultimate in comedy and cockpit experience. Dogfights tonight at 9, 8 Central on the History Channel. Watsonville, 152 at Bloomfield. A two-vehicle crash in the right shoulder. Looks like Hollister working on a fender bender. Highway 25 at Shore Road. Actually, they're telling us this is a grass fire. The brush fire has been reported on the right shoulder. Hollister fire crews are on scene there. Other than that, Elkhorn, looks like Castroville Boulevard at Paradise. A couple of people are trapped in an overturned vehicle on the right shoulder. We have emergency crews on the scene there, expecting a tow truck to arrive on the scene. They also need extrication equipment as well, and so they're waiting for that precious equipment to arrive at this point. During the hot weather, we all know it's vital to conserve energy, especially if officials call a flex alert. After all, by saving energy, you're immediately helping energy challenge Updates at FlexYourPower.org.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Elvis Costello, if you're listening, could you update this song? And just change the lyrics a little to watching the election officials. Oh, he's probably not listening. 22 minutes after the hour, Mark Crispin Miller with us. He's the author of Fooled Again, The Real Case for Electoral Reform. Visit his website, markcrispinmiller.com. He covers this arena very well and provides a lot of useful information. And we're joined by Jake in Arcata, who's got a comment. Go ahead, Jake. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter B. I do have a question about the 2004 election, specifically what happened in Ohio. Now, there is, you know, a story out there that what happened on election night was John Kerry decided to concede, whereas John Edwards wanted to fight on and you know, contest what happened in Ohio. Now, it's my understanding, I remember Professor Miller saying in the past that John Kerry confided in him that John Kerry knew the election in 2004 was stolen, but didn't do anything about it. I'd like to get some elucidation on this. Why are leading Democratic politicians aware of what's going on but unwilling to do anything about it?
Well, that's an excellent question. What happened was, just for the sake of accuracy, what happened was the day after Election Day. First, John Edwards came out. You may remember he was on TV promising to count every vote. And then a couple of hours later, Kerry called him up and told him that he was going to concede. All this is in Fooled Again. But what was really remarkable was what happened about a year later. I was, I arranged to meet with Kerry on October 28th, 2005. Someone we both know shares my concern about the integrity of our elections. The hardcover of Fooled Again had just come out, so I arranged to meet with him to give him a copy and kind of, you know, try to get him to embrace this issue. I handed him the book. I said, "You were robbed, Senator." And he said, "I know." And he went on and on in considerable distress about the fact that this issue simply doesn't seem to... It didn't seem to move his fellow Democrats in Washington. This is actually, my account of this is what begins the new afterword to the paperback edition.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he specifically mentioned Chris Dodd of Connecticut, for example, and said, I was just talking to him last week. I said, "Chris, these machines are very dangerous, et cetera. We've got to do something about it." And he said, Dodd said to him, "We looked into it. There's nothing to it." Kerry looks at me and says, "They're in denial." Now, the amazing thing is first of all, let me say that I was absolutely elated that he was so frank with me. I mean, I consider his very hasty concession to have been a catastrophe comparable to the theft of the election itself, because it just knocked the stuffing out of everybody.
Yeah.
And I think he won by a considerable number of votes. I don't think it was as close as we've been led to believe.
And, Mark, it was especially frustrating because I was one of the people who helped raise additional money right before the election for post-election legal proceedings.
That's right. $15 million he had for this. Now, let me explain what happened and try to answer the question, because it really is very, very important. Why does this kind of thing happen? Well, this was, on October 28th, and my book tour began a few days later, and I naturally told this story at every opportunity. A week later, that next Friday, I was on Democracy Now!, and I told the story again. And the producers of the show sent out a press release saying, "Kerry now believes the race was stolen," or "Kerry told me this," says, you know, Miller. This lit up the internet. Everybody was flipping out over it. And then within a few hours, Kerry's office released a statement categorically denying that we had the conversation. Now, this was extremely surprising and angering to me, because they as much as said I made it up as a publicity stunt. When I got over my anger, though, I thought about it and I realized that there was something very very significant here. The given explanation for why Kerry changed his mind, and this was in a story that Robert Perry published a couple days later on consortiumnews.com.
Mm-hmm.
He interviewed a longtime Kerry associate on the record who said Kerry does believe the race was stolen, but he won't talk about it because he knows that the powers in place will smash him if he does. Now, that sounds credible until you think about it for a minute. I believe that in Kerry's case, and in the case of most Democrats, and that includes your senators there in California, Feinstein in particular,
yeah,
Hillary Clinton, Obama, all of them, it's one thing to understand intellectually that you have been ripped off. And I think Kerry's smart enough to know that he was ripped off. It's really something else, though, to take it to heart, to understand it with your gut, to feel it, and to grasp its implications. That's the step Kerry couldn't take. Because, look, if he really did face it, you know, if he really did take it to heart, if he really faced up to its implications, which are terrifying, what would he care if people call him names? What would he care if people say, oh, you're a sore loser? I mean, it's an emergency. This is supposed to be the world's greatest democracy.
Yeah.
If the system has been subverted by a party that is about an inch away from being outright fascist, that's serious. And if he believed that...
We got to take a break. Mark Crispin, okay. Miller with us. Jake, thanks for a great question. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Terry MacArthur of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry MacArthur is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for Tasty News shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas. And we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters. Weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The happy power chords of Golden Era. Launching into another segment of the Peter B. Collins Show. As we mentioned, Brad Friedman has the day off. He's our specialist on election integrity issues. And be sure to visit bradblog.com for the latest coverage of these matters. And as I mentioned, Brad is going to be doing the entire Peter B. Collins Show starting midweek next week as I head off on to vacation. He'll be doing about 8 days. And then in the second phase of my summer hiatus, Christine Kraft from Sacramento, a great radio broadcaster and a good friend, will be plugged into the Peter B. Collins network here, and so you'll be hearing her, and then I'll return, you know, at some point. I promise. I am leaving the country to get a little break from Bushism, but I will be back. Mark Crispin Miller is with us this hour. His book, Fooled Again, is out in a new paperback edition. And as he mentioned, the story about John Kerry's admissions and denials of the stolen election in Ohio in 2004 lead off the afterword in the new edition of the book. And Mark, returning to our discussion earlier about the Holt Bill, H.R. 811, one of the canards that just drives me crazy, and I know it's pushed Brad almost over the limit, is this argument that's never substantiated that there aren't enough votes to pass a ban on direct record electronic voting machines.
Yeah.
And we've seen a Republican legislature and a new Republican governor in Florida, Charlie Crist, pass an outright ban on DREs.
Yes.
And it is possible, and the votes are there even in a Republican-dominated situation in a case like Florida where we believe the election was stolen for the Republicans in 2000.
That's right.
And so it's very hard to believe without any surveys or any even anecdotal information that the representations of Hold and PFAW and Common Cause in that regard are correct.
That's right.
And let me offer Exhibit B, because Tom Corbett joins us now from Riverside, California. That's the Inland Empire east of Los Angeles. He is guest blogging at Brad Blog Today. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Peter B., great to be with you.
Nice to talk with you. And there's a victory in the wind in Riverside County where a wayward supervisor laid out a stupid bet of 1,000 to 1.
Yes, he did, and backed down when Harry Hursty actually flew here from 17-hour flight from Finland. And he kind of went, oops, well, I guess I didn't realize you had anybody of that caliber.
Yeah. So that's a wager that he'll regret, and I just regret that he didn't actually take us up on it, because it would have been fun to spend his money.
It would have been, and we would have put it towards charitable causes, of course.
Yeah. So tell us what is afoot there at the Board of Supervisors in Riverside County.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I'm a little bummed because we just got knocked off our perch of the second worst place to vote in the United States. Bev Harris removed us from that perch and said we're probably down in the bottom 10 now instead of the bottom 2. So we're rising up, you know, out of the gutter, and it's been pretty good dwelling down there. But what happened is the Board of Supervisors, after getting frustrated by 2 years of, I guess you could say, haranguing by the election integrity advocates here, a group called Save Our Vote,
mm-hmm.
They said, you know, we're tired of hearing from you guys. You guys are a pain in the tail and this and that, and we're going to appoint a special Blue Ribbon Committee to look into all these things because we think everything's just fine. Thank you very much. And I said, well, of course you'll be appointing someone from Save Our Vote on this five-member commission. And they said, yeah, right. They said, you're biased. And I said, oh, okay, no one else will be biased on that committee. Surprise of surprises, this is an absolutely excellent committee, a former supervisor, member of the Board of Supervisors, two retired judges, a newspaper publisher, and a woman who is the head of a chamber of commerce out here. The five of them got together starting in January, and by April, they reported an interim report to the board. They said, we're afraid we may have five minority reports we're going to be bringing to you instead of one unanimous report. We can't mm-hmm. seem to agree on anything. Well, yesterday, they issued a unanimous report recommending 17 different actions be taken, and the two headline actions are A, dump the DREs, and B, initiate an audit of the security procedures of the Registrar of Voters office in Riverside County.
Well, this is great progress. And what did Jeff Stone have to say on his way to the Indian casino nearby?
He said, I'm surprised. I'm just surprised. I didn't expect this.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I read in the paper this morning. Now, he was also interviewed on a local TV station just before I was this morning. And he says, well, we're going to look closely at these 17 recommendations, and we're going to put them off for 2 months, and then we'll come back and look at them.
Uh-huh.
So the board's planning to stonewall the recommendations from their hand-picked committee for 2 months
mm-hmm.
So that potentially by that time they can come back and say, well, you know, these are good recommendations, but we just can't do them in time for the February election. So
now Tom, you're probably aware that the new Secretary of State in California, Deborah Bowen, is conducting a full review of the certification of these machines.
Top to bottom.
And so I'm curious if the Riverside Blue Ribbon Panel report will be delivered to her office, because they are in the final stages of conducting the top-to-bottom review.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have forwarded a copy to Lowell Finley and to Evan Goldberg and mm-hmm. her chief of staff,
right.
And am awaiting some comments from them in the near future. But they've been watching this all very carefully and closely, particularly since the chairman of our board commented in public session that he thought Deborah Bowen was nuts, and he didn't mind telling her that to her face.
Oh, okay. Well, that tells us more about him than
mm-hmm.
about the Secretary of State. Tom, anything else you want to add?
Well, just that, you know, we've built up a volunteer force of over 100 election observer volunteers, and we've grown from couple dozen when we first started, and we're shooting for 200 to 300 observers for the November 08 election.
Mm-hmm.
And over this period of time, we've been making all these recommendations to the Board of Supervisors, and what's interesting is that 9 of the 17 recommendations that the Board's own hand-picked committee is presenting to them on Tuesday, 9 of those were recommendations specifically that Save Our Vote has been making to them, and they've been rejecting over the last 2 years.
That's real encouraging. You got a website people can visit?
You know, unfortunately, Save Our Vote doesn't have a website, but the Brad blog would be an excellent place to go, and blackboxvoting.org would mm-hmm. also be an excellent place to go. Both of those are carrying lead stories right now about the success that we think we're having, the mm-hmm. appears that we're having here in Riverside County.
All right, Tom, thank you for a great report, and you keep on, will you?
Absolutely.
That's Tom Corbett, and that is Save Our Vote. It's an acronym that's too long to explain. Mark Crispin Miller, one other bright spot that came through your listserv just in the last day or so originated with Steve Heller. And Steve's been on our program, and if you go to Bradblog and go into the archives and search for Steve Heller, you'll find out that he is a Diebold whistleblower who has paid a substantial price for telling the truth. But he posted an item that Alameda County, which is the county that includes Oakland, California, has decided that due to the problems with DRE voting systems, they need to rerun an entire election for a contested ballot measure back from 2004.
Yeah, terrific news. Sets a terrific precedent. And it's just, you know, more evidence, as is Tom's story, of the fact that when people know what's been going down, when they're informed, they make the right decision. You know, I'm an unembarrassed radical Democrat with a small D. I think we should do away with voting registration requirements and have, you know, same day voting, the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
When people know what's going down, you know, they do the right thing. The problem is that it's very hard to know what's going down, because both parties and the media, and that includes a lot of the left press, I'm afraid, is somehow uninterested in this story, which seems to me to be at the very heart of what we're all about, you know,
yeah.
Voting rights and all that.
Well, Mark, I grew up in Cincinnati, and even before, Ken Blackwell and the current Bob Taft were in office, we had a lot of problems with Republican dominance of politics in the state.
Right.
And in Cincinnati, we never believed that Democratic votes were fully counted.
Right.
And so in some ways, you know, I'm embarrassed by the land of my birth. And in other ways, I'm not surprised. But I really, you know, to me, this is so fundamental, and it's not a partisan issue, or at least it should not be.
Absolutely.
I appear partisan about it because the people I favored in the last two presidential elections didn't win, and there were very serious issues about the way those elections were conducted. I firmly believe the elections were manipulated and ultimately stolen. But it's not sour grapes, and I believe I actually would fight as hard if I felt Kerry had stolen the election.
Well, I agree completely. I mean, I didn't think much of Kerry for one thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just to offer some statistical confirmation for your point, and this also speaks to your argument about there not being enough votes in Congress, et cetera. James Zogby did a poll last summer, which I'm sure you know about this, which found that 92% of the American people, 92%, I think, crosses class party and class boundaries.
Yes.
They believe in openly observable vote counting practices. That means that they don't trust voting machines, because you cannot have an observable vote count when it's done by computer. I mean, there's no way to read the computer's mind. This is a winning issue, and all around the country, even though the Bush Republicans have benefited egregiously from all this fraud, around the country, the fight for election integrity is bipartisan. I don't think of this government as a conservative government by any stretch of the imagination, and have talked to a lot of genuine conservatives who really do believe in things like the Bill of Rights and one person, one vote. And that's where I am. You know, the Democratic Party, considering how badly they've been mauled by all this fraud, they are bizarre in their refusal to deal with the issue. It's like they suffer from battered spouse syndrome. And as long as I've got California on the horn here,
yeah, go ahead.
It's worth people looking into the piece of legislation that Dianne Feinstein has cooked up in the Senate.
Oh, God, I can't believe how awful it is.
It makes the whole bill look like a dream bill. It's absolutely grotesque, and among its co-sponsors are Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and Bernie Sanders. What are these people thinking? If you want to get a good, succinct sense of what's in that bill, which it will mean the extinction of democracy for sure, there's a terrific piece that Voters Unite came out with a comparison of S-1487, which is the Feinstein bill, mm-hmm. with Holt's H.R. 811. It's on my blog at, markcrispinmiller.com. The subject line is, Feinstein's bill is horrible, horrible in all caps. It was, I think, June 20th. And it'll take your breath away.
Yeah.
Now, people who are in touch with Congress tell me that the game plan is to reconcile the Holt bill with the Feinstein bill. Well, they are both grotesque bills. And if we needed any other evidence that the Democratic Party is not really ultimately interested in democracy of, by, and for the people, this will stand as that evidence.
Well, and the Feinstein bill reads as if she, went on fact-finding missions to North Korea and Turkmenistan in order to come up with a model. We got to take a break, Mark. We'll be back. Thanks for laughing at my jokes.
All right.
Fooled Again is the book. Mark Crispin Miller's our guest. Subtitled, The Real Case for Electoral Reform. There's a new version out in softcover with a new 100-page addendum. Check it out. And log on to markcrispinmiller.com. Sign up for his listserv because a lot of great information comes my way from there. 888-5-PETER-B if you have a late-breaking call to join us with. 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a bite of ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. MPG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Tom Hartman.
Why would we hand the beating heart of democracy, the vote, over to a private corporation?
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
And we're giving it to a corporation called Diebold, whose former president, Wally O'Dell, says, you know, I'm going to give Ohio to George W. Bush. We're giving it to a corporation like ES&S, who used to be run by Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska. I mean, it's our vote.
Tom Hartman, weekday evenings on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
All right, everybody, let's take a look at the very latest, starting off with Hollister. It's Highway 25 at Shore Road. Grass fire, brush fire, actually, is on the right shoulder. Hollister fire crew on scene there handling that situation. Also want to mention the fact that we have another problem. It is working in Prunedale, northbound 101 at San Miguel Canyon Road. Three-vehicle crash. Two vehicles on the right shoulder, a third in the center divide, partially blocking the left lane. Castroville, Highway 1 at Molera, an accident there. The two-vehicle crash, not blocking the roadway, which is good news. Hollister, San Juan Road in both directions of 156, now closed until the 16th. Looks like they're doing some seismic retrofitting, so we're telling you about that one. It's JCPenney's 2-day on sale.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B.
No windmill for the night, love forever high.
Brad Friedman's on vacation, and in his place, Mark Crispin Miller, covering our election protection issues today. One more time, his book is Fooled Again, out in a new updated softcover edition, The Real Case for Electoral Reform. And visit markcrispinmiller.com to keep abreast of his daily publishing and relaying of information. Mark, I just want to point out one item that really struck me, and it was posted on your blog on July the 6th, originating from New Zealand. A guy named Ernest Partridge, who is co-editor of the Crisis Papers, asks, where is the outrage? And he compares, the whole 90s whitewater digging into the Clinton background and the waste of 6.5 years, $70 million, and all the faux outrage that was generated from that leading up to the Lewinsky impeachment, and then says, but look at the election fraud. Look at what's going on in the world's alleged leading democracy, and where is the outrage?
Well, it's very important. I mean, this is something I've only just realized, although it seems elementary, but it's a very liberating thing, and that is that we can't actually infer how the people are thinking or feeling about things in general from the press, from the media. I mean, we all tend to do this. We look at the idiocy on TV, Paris Hilton's prison sentence and all that stuff, and we, I think, understandably conclude from that that's what people care about and that's what they're watching. But having, been all over the country the last couple of years, like Brad and others, talking, and I'm talking about red states, blue states, I don't even really believe in that distinction, to, largely centrist crowds, I've come to the conclusion that the press is not a gauge of how people feel.
Mm-hmm.
The people are ahead of the press in so many ways. I mean, for example, if it were up to the people, as it should be, there wouldn't be electronic voting machines.
Yep.
If it were up to the people, as it should be, we'd be out of Iraq. If it were up to the people, as it should be, we'd have national health care. It's true that people aren't out in the streets, throwing rocks through windows, but that doesn't mean that they're quiescent. It doesn't mean that they're apathetic.
Yeah.
So, the problem is that the people who run the media think that we are idiots, and they program stuff accordingly,
because
all they care about is, the bottom line. We need more election reform. We need media reform. Media reform is crucial. Yeah.
Sometime I'll tell you my theory that the sophisticated market research that they use now in both politics and media, I think, is at the base of the baseness of what we see and hear.
Yeah,
I want to squeeze in a couple of callers. Mark in Port Orford, welcome. You're on the air with Peter B. and Mark Crispin Miller.
Well, hello. I want to start off by thanking Mark for his unabashed approach to this topic. I've heard him speak about it quite a bit, and he pulls no punches, and it's really refreshing to see someone talk about an issue that's this important in those terms. I'm kind of cynical by nature, and the Bushies have made me extremely cynical, and I have a thought that I'd like to run by Mark to see what he thinks of it in terms of why the large D Democratic tap dance around this issue that seems to be so clear-cut, so easy to understand, that we can't have a democracy without legitimate elections, and yet they're tap dancing all around it. My cynical thought is that being able to control an election is a very heady position to be in, and I wonder if that doesn't appeal to the Democrats as much as the Republicans.
Hmm. Mark?
Yeah, well, that may be, but I tend to think it's more likely to be the case that the Democrats take the approach they take because they're basically feeding at the same trough that the Republicans feed from, and the Republicans get to eat more of that slop. But this is a political system that's based entirely on money. Big money runs it. Democratic candidates have to do as much whoring after those dollars as Republicans do, and it has to do with the fact that our politics is all media-based now, and therefore infinitely more expensive than it was back in the days when it was based more on, neighborhood-to-neighborhood organization. Not to romanticize those days, but the fact is the reason why the Democrats don't really care about democracy for the most part is that the people who subsidize them. I shouldn't say people. I should say the corporations that subsidize them aren't interested in democracy at all.
Mark, thanks for a great call. Let me squeeze in another one. Chris and Salinas, you're next. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks to both of you for what you're doing. I just wanted to say Ellen Tyson talked with Bernie Sanders on the Tom Hartman Show a couple weeks ago, and Bernie Sanders said he was going to take a hard, good look at the Dianne Feinstein bill. So I also recommend everybody call Bernie Sanders and remind him to take a good, hard look and probably would be better to recommend that he withdraw his support.
Yeah, I should say so.
Well, you know, Bernie, I just wanted to throw that out real quick.
All right, thank you, Chris. Go ahead,
thanks
Mark.
Thanks a lot.
Bernie Sanders is an odd case because here's this guy, he's got impeccable progressive credentials, but he's one of the, you know, he has never once credited the idea of election fraud by the right, and he has said publicly that it's not a good idea to talk about this because it might depress voter turnout.
I've heard that from others, too. It really bugs me.
That's the talking point the Democrats use. It's completely cynical. I mean, how can anyone who calls himself a Democrat believe that it's necessary not to tell people vital information?
Well, and the converse is that we want to continue to dupe morons into coming to elections that we're not sure are credible.
Yeah, exactly. It's so stupid and so corrupt that I don't really believe that. Again, I think Bernie Sanders is in denial, too.
Yeah.
You know, to be a professional politician, let's face it, you cannot afford to face certain truths. You
right.
know, you couldn't get up and go to work every day.
Mark, I got to stop us here because the clock has run. Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure. We didn't even get to vote caging and a lot of other things, but we'll have you back.
All right. Thanks, Peter. Have a nice vacation.
All right. Fooled Again, out in a new soft cover edition with additional information. Pick it up. I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Smile and until then.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. White House spokesman Tony Snow somewhat sheepishly confirmed today that with just 8 weeks to go before a crucial assessment of the situation in Iraq, the Iraqi parliament is planning a month-long vacation.
My understanding is at this juncture they're going to take August off, but, you know, they may change their mind.
By way of explanation, Snow said it's 130 degrees in Baghdad in August. When a reporter pointed out that U.S. troops would be fighting in those conditions, he said, that's a good point. The White House faces a fresh challenge on Capitol Hill. Two prominent Republican senators, Richard Lugar and John Warner, have drafted legislation that would require President Bush to come up with a scaled-back strategy in Iraq by mid-October. The Pentagon revealed today that the number of fully functional Iraqi battalions has gone down from 10 to 6. No one knows what al-Qaeda is up to, but CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports U.S. counterterrorism experts are worried.
The FBI right now is taking a fresh look at old cases, re-interviewing suspects and sources, searching for any clue at all that terrorists are planning some kind of summer strike against the U.S. Now, to this point, no plot has surfaced, but there are multiple warning signs on multiple fronts.
The attempted car bombings in Britain are the most recent example. Two members of Congress are demanding more disclosure from the Bush administration. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss has that.
The top Democrat and Republican on a committee looking into the way the military covered up the friendly fire death of NFL star Pat Tillman is insisting the White House stop withholding documents they want. Though they've gotten over 10,000 pages, Oversight Chairman Henry Waxman, a Democrat, and the committee's top Republican Tom Davis rejected a White House claim of confidentiality for other documents they want to see. This is one of a number of cases in which the White House is withholding documents and witnesses from congressional investigators, citing executive privilege. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Lady Bird Johnson is lying in repose at the Wildflower Center she founded in Austin. Among the mourners, retired Secret Service agent Jim Harden, who led her security detail for 22 years.
22 years of just happiness, sharing the world with her, and she was probably the most gracious, kind, and considerate person that I've ever known.
An invitation-only funeral will be held tomorrow. On Sunday, the former First Lady will be buried beside President Lyndon Johnson at the LBJ Ranch. Joe Venable always wanted to see the Golden Gate Bridge, but on a school